good Monday to you. Welcome to another edition of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by our friends at Mosler. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Cam Edwards, your host, coming to you today from beautiful Farmville, Virginia. And I am joined in studio by our friend Jen Jakes of BearingArms.com. How are you?
I'm great. This is amazing. I love being here. Farmville is quintessential Anytown USA.
It is, isn't it?
It really is.
Well, it is. It's great to have you here in studio. I mentioned that you were at the NRA Ranger this on Friday.
That was very, very fun with
so
the girls.
What are you doing here in Virginia? Because normally you're in Wisconsin.
No, and apparently I brought the weather with me.
Right.
Just came
Thanks
right
for that,
along.
By the way. I appreciate it.
You know, anytime I can help. I had some training at FPF training with John Murphy in Culpeper, Virginia, which was very cool. Fundamentals of concealed carry and street encounters.
Really?
Really informative.
And just out of curiosity, was the class pretty full?
It was. We had 14 people the first day and then 10 the second day. And the 14 that stayed the first day, troopers.
Yeah.
Because it rained and it was cold and
you're
I
outside.
Was miserable. Yes.
You're getting over double pneumonia, you told us.
I am. Yes.
I'm sure that was great for your double pneumonia.
Right. It
well,
was the fresh air.
Here.
It helped clear it up.
Sure. Well, I'm glad that you're here.
Me too. Thank you.
Breathe that way.
Just,
you know, we can move the microphone so that
okay.
No, it's bad TV. Normally, you want to look at you know the person
the
you're
person.
Talking to, but today we can change things around.
That's fine.
I can just do this too. So we have a great show for you today. Coming up on the program, Doug Ritter of Knife Rights with the latest out of New York City. There is the truth about knives with the headline. It is go time in New York now. Senate Bill 6483A. Is the knife law reform bill. We're going to talk about it with Doug Ritter coming up later on in the hour. Next hour, Amelia Hamilton has a brand new retelling of a classic fairy tale. And once again, the anti-gunners are losing their minds over this because apparently fractured fairy tales. Did anybody get upset over fractured fairy tales? Remember that?
I do remember that.
On the Rocky and Bullwinkle show, right?
Right.
I don't recall anybody getting all...
bent out of shape?
Yeah.
No. Well, these are obviously very offensive because the children do for themselves. That's terrible.
It is absolutely awful. Hansel and Gretel Have Guns is the new retelling. So we'll talk with Amelia about that next hour. In hour three, Hero of the Day, sponsored by AdCor Defense. The deal of the day. Nobody wants to sponsor that segment, oddly enough. I don't blame them. It's a pretty awful segment, and it's pretty sad how often we can find these stories. Good guy of the day coming up, Tim Lee with the Center for Individual Freedom in Hour 3. Representative Mike Kelly, congressman from Pennsylvania, on his efforts to renew a funding ban for the U.N. Arms Trade Treaty in the fiscal year 2017. Now, we got a lot of stuff to talk about today as well, including Jen's trip to the range with the women from the Independent Women's Forum, the LA Times. Remember, way back in December, if you're a regular listener and a viewer to this program, way back in December, before Christmas even, it's March 21st, about 3 months ago, we had a reporter from the LA Times hanging out in studio with us for a day. And today, the story ran, and we'll talk about that a little bit. Maybe you can interview me about that. We'll
Good.
Put the
point counterpoint
on the other foot.
I like it.
Okay, I feel better about that than me just you know bloviating about an article about me. That just
I'm
seems
here
a
for
little.
You.
Just seems a little too. I don't know, but we'll talk about that as well. But I do want to start out with news from the Supreme Court today. A unanimous decision sending a case back down to the Supreme Court of Massachusetts, the Hill. Newspaper says the justices unanimously upended a Massachusetts stun gun ban, calling it unconstitutional. Indeed, they did. They say Massachusetts stun gun ban came into question after a woman was arrested for carrying one in her pursuit for protection against her ex-boyfriend. Police arrested her, and a state court upheld the ban, arguing that the Second Amendment was never intended to apply to stun guns. In essence, their argument was the Second Amendment applies to the types of weapons that were around at the time that the Second Amendment was written. And since stun guns were not around back then, the Second Amendment does not apply to them. And because these stun guns were not around at the time of the writing of the Second Amendment, these are also unusual and dangerous items. Therefore, they don't fall under the purview of the Second Amendment. However, In pretty big news, the Supreme Court said today, no, that's not right. This is the holding of the court. Now, Justice Alito wrote a concurring opinion that we'll talk about, but this is the opinion of the Supreme Court itself. The court has held that the, quote, Second Amendment extends prima facie to all instruments that constitute bearable arms, even those that were not in existence at the time of the founding, mm-hmm. quoting from the Heller decision, and that this Second Amendment right is fully applicable to the states, quoting McDonald versus Chicago. They say the court offered the Massachusetts High Court, Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts, offered three explanations to support its holding that the Second Amendment does not extend to stun guns. First, the court explained that stun guns are not protected because they were, quote, not in common use at the time of the Second Amendment's enactment. Well, again, the court just pointed out, hey, in Heller, we said that's not the test. Second, they said they asked whether stun guns are, quote, dangerous per se at common law and unusual in an attempt to apply one important limitation on the right to keep and carry arms, referring to the, quote, historical tradition of prohibiting the carrying of dangerous and unusual weapons. In doing so, the Supreme Court said, the court concluded, the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts, concluded that stun guns are, quote, unusual because they are a, quote, thoroughly modern invention. The Supreme Court said, by equating unusual with in common use at the time of the Second Amendment's enactment, the court's second explanation is the same as the first. It is inconsistent with Heller for the same reason. So, in other words, you can try to rephrase it. You're still not reading this correctly.
Right.
And finally, they say the court used a contemporary lens and found, quote, nothing in the record to suggest that stun guns are readily adaptable to use in the military. Supreme Court said, but Heller rejected the proposition that, quote, only those weapons useful in warfare are protected. And so the court said, for these three reasons, the explanation the Massachusetts court offered for upholding the law contradicts this court's precedent. Consequently, the petition for a writ of certiorari and the motion for leave to proceed in form of papyrus is granted. The judgment of the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts is vacated, and the case is remanded for further proceedings not inconsistent with this opinion. So, in other words, you're wrong. We're throwing out your verdict. Go reconsider this case based on what we have just told you.
That's right. And the beauty of the Founding Fathers was that they created our Constitution and the amendments to grow along with our country.
Absolutely.
And that's what this is.
Nobody on the anti-gun side likes to use a First Amendment analogy here because it doesn't work out well for them.
Exactly.
Right? Because the First Amendment talks about the freedom of the press,
mm-hmm.
not as a distinct group of Americans who practice journalism as a profession, the freedom of the printing press, the freedom of the citizens to use the most common tool for getting their message across at the time, the printing press.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that the freedom of the press doesn't apply to electronic media? Doesn't apply to broadcast media? I mean, it's an absurd argument.
It is, but it's all they have.
Yeah. Absurd arguments.
So they keep using it.
Right. So, again, this is an important decision. And Justice Alito Justice Thomas concurred with this opinion. But Justice Alito concurred in the judgment, wrote about the case, and again, the facts of the case, who the plaintiff was, Jamie Catano, who found herself homeless and in fear of her life after a bad altercation with an abusive boyfriend, put her in the hospital. A friend offered her a stun gun, quote, for self-defense against her former boyfriend. She accepted. They write, it's a good thing she did. One night after leaving work, Catano found her ex-boyfriend waiting for her outside. He started screaming that she was not going to expletive deleted work at this place anymore because she should be home with the kids that they had together. The justice writes, Catano's abuser towered over her by nearly a foot and outweighed her by close to 100 pounds, but she didn't need physical strength to protect herself. She stood her ground, displayed the stun gun, and announced, I'm not going to take this anymore. I don't want to have to use this on you, but if you don't leave me alone, I'm going to have to. The gambit worked. The ex-boyfriend, quote, got scared, and he left her alone.
Sounds like self-defense to me.
It does kind of sound like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Justice Alito says it's settled that the Second Amendment protects an individual right to keep and bear arms that applies against both the federal government and the states. He says under Massachusetts law, Catano's mere possession of the stun gun that may have saved her life made her a criminal. Even though by arming herself, she was able to protect against a criminal threat that restraining orders had proved useless to prevent. That's an important phrase from a Supreme Court justice, even in a concurring opinion, just the acknowledgement
mm-hmm.
That a restraining order is to someone who wants to disregard it. It provides no more protection than any other piece of paper provides.
A restraining order is just like gun laws. Who is following gun laws? Who is following a restraining order? Only the people who feel like following them are following them.
Right. And it's good to have a paper trail.
Yes.
And hopefully there are repercussions if that restraining order is violated.
However.
But the restraining order is not a suit of armor.
Exactly.
Is how I like to
think. You cannot hold up that piece of paper and say stop.
Absolutely.
You can, but it's not doing it.
So Justice Alito says the reasoning by the Supreme Judicial Court in Massachusetts defies our decision in Heller, which rejected as, quote, bordering on the frivolous, the argument that only those arms in existence in the 18th century are protected by the Second Amendment. He says the decision below also does a grave disservice to vulnerable individuals like Catano, who must defend themselves because the state will not. Now, we'll probably talk about the decision here throughout the program, but there is a very important statement in this opinion by Justice Alito. Now, again, this opinion by Justice Alito was concurred with by Justice Thomas, so they're the only two justices signing on.
Right.
This isn't the opinion of the entire court. But it is, I think, important to note that the sort of test that Justice Alito and Justice Thomas lay out, they say a weapon may not be banned unless it is both dangerous and unusual. Because the court rejects the lower conclusion that stun guns are unusual, it does not need to consider the lower court's conclusion that they are also dangerous. But he said, make no mistake, the decision below gravely erred on both grounds. He said, as to dangerous, the court below held that a weapon is dangerous per se if it is designed and constructed to produce death or great bodily harm for the purpose of bodily assault or defense. He said, this cannot be used to identify arms that fall outside of the Second Amendment. He said, the relative dangerousness of a weapon is irrelevant when the weapon belongs to a class of arms commonly used for lawful purposes. Second, he says, even in cases where dangerousness might be relevant, the Supreme Judicial Court's test sweeps far too broadly. Heller defined the arms covered by the Second Amendment to include, quote, anything that a man wears for his defense or takes into his hands or useth in wrath to cast at or strike another. Under the decision below, however, virtually every covered arm would qualify as dangerous. So, in other words, just because a gun is a gun doesn't make it unusual or dangerous. This flies in the face of the Supreme Court decision. So, what does the what should the test be? Justice Alito says the Supreme Court, Supreme Judicial Court's conclusion that stun guns are unusual rested largely on its premise that one must ask whether a weapon was commonly used in 1789. As already discussed, this is simply wrong. He says that Heller acknowledged that advancements in military technology might render many commonly owned weapons ineffective in warfare, but such, quote, modern developments cannot change our interpretation of this right. And in essence, he says that the test that should be used is whether or not these firearms are used in common use by law-abiding Americans for lawful purposes. He says when it comes to stun guns, quote, while less popular than handguns, stun guns are widely owned and accepted as a legitimate means of self-defense across the country. Massachusetts's categorical ban of such weapons therefore violates the Second Amendment. So if that's the test that Justice Alito would like to see,
right.
are these in common use by law-abiding Americans for lawful purposes? I got to be honest with you. We've got that decision out of the Fourth Circuit right now, striking down where the court didn't strike down the Maryland Firearm Safety Act, but it did tell the lower court, look, you've got to consider these laws under strict scrutiny.
Right.
We don't really see how these laws hold muster because these guns, these magazines, these are constitutionally protected firearms. They fall under the purview of the Second Amendment. Here you have the Supreme Court, or at least two justices on the Supreme Court, saying, look, if guns are commonly owned by a lot of law-abiding Americans, and they're not using those guns in a lot of crimes, but they're using them for a lot of lawful purposes like self-defense, competition, hunting, those are constitutionally protected firearms. Now we've got that Fourth Circuit decision going back en banc, and I wonder what this decision today, how that's going to resonate there in the Fourth Circuit as they consider Maryland's Firearm Safety Act.
Well, you would think that liberals would really want things like stun guns and pepper spray protected so that more people would own them and use them for self-defense, since they do not want more people owning guns. So let it fall under the Second Amendment. Let them use these weapons for self-defense rather than guns. So we'll have to see how that plays out.
Yeah, we will. Now, Justice Alito said, a state's most basic responsibility is to keep its people safe. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts was either unable or unwilling to do what was necessary to protect Jamie Catano, so she was forced to protect herself. To make matters worse, the Commonwealth chose to deploy its prosecutorial resources to prosecute and convict her of a criminal offense for arming herself with a non-lethal weapon that may well have saved her life. The Supreme Judicial Court then affirmed her conviction on the flimsiest of grounds. This court's grudging per curiam now sends the case back to that same court. And the consequences for Catano may prove more tragic still, as her conviction likely bars her from ever bearing arms for self-defense. He concludes, if the fundamental right of self-defense does not protect Catano, then the safety of all Americans is left to the mercy of state authorities, who may be more concerned about disarming the people than about keeping them safe.
That's a scary thought.
Yeah, and I would say a word of warning coming from a Supreme Court judge. Now, it's also interesting that he called the per curiam, the court's decision, grudging, right? Because as far as I know, this was unanimous.
Right.
That kind of makes me wonder, you know, you don't get to hear a lot about the behind-the-scenes arguments between the justices. We hear about the, you know, oral arguments that are held publicly where the plaintiff and the defendant will present their case and the justices may ask a question or two.
But not behind closed doors.
Right. But that makes me wonder a lot about the conversation and the arguments on this case.
Like, they didn't want to admit that it's...
And what did it, you know, I don't want to say what did it take in terms of, like, you know, bribes. I don't think that's not what I'm talking about. But what did it take to reach that unanimous decision? However grudgingly it might have been reached.
Right.
What was the argument, I wonder, that won the day?
I would love to know.
I would, too. It seems to me that maybe we saw some of that argument in Justice Alito's opinion itself.
Absolutely. And I hope so, because it really, it's common sense, which you don't really get to see a whole lot of these days. So it's a good case. It really is. It'll be interesting to follow.
But, you know, it's great to see this unanimous decision. But keep in mind, we also have an open seat right now. And
nerve-wracking.
Yeah, well, you know, the elections that we are in right now, very, very important, because an opinion like this could change in an instant if the balance of the court shifts.
That's right. And like Chris Cox said at CPAC, don't buy the gun and lose the freedom. And a lot of Americans are going out there and buying guns and applying for concealed carry permits and becoming trained and responsible gun owners. And that's great. But take it the step further. Join the NRA. Call your representatives. Get out and vote. Get involved, because owning a gun, being a gun owner, is one part of what is going to help our Second Amendment. The second part is making sure that we keep people in office that are going to protect our Second Amendment rights.
Absolutely. All right. And speaking of that, you know, knives do fall under the purview of the Second Amendment as well.
Right.
And when we come back after a quick timeout, Doug Ritter of Knife Rights has the latest on what's going on in New York City and the state legislature there in Albany, in a quest, a years-long quest now, to restore some sanity to the knife laws in the Big Apple. Stick around. We'll be right back. More Cam Edwards, more Jen Jakes of Bearing Arms, sitting in all afternoon long here on NRA News, Cam and Company.
Speaking with Jim Sapieca, director of the NRA Museums. Jim, in this installment, we want to talk about the NRA National Sporting Arms Museum. Tell us what it's all about.
Well, that is the newest of our three museums. We have the NRA National Firearms Museum here at NRA headquarters in Fairfax, Virginia. The NRA National Sporting Arms Museum was opened 2 years ago at the Bass Pro Shops in Springfield, Missouri, and it is a spectacular museum. There are about 1,000 historic arms there, and of course, as you'd guess, there's an emphasis on sporting arms, the arms of hunting, of sport shooting. But it goes far, far beyond that. We have exhibits that include guns of the Old West. We've got some great new guns that are just coming in and will be on display soon. Bat Masterson, Bass Reeves, who is a very iconic Old West figure. the first African-American U.S. Marshal west of the Mississippi, and one of the most prolific lawmen of the Old West in terms of number of arrests, number of gunfights, a remarkable Old West figure that has been mostly overlooked until just the past few years. That museum, the really gratifying thing about that museum is the attendance. We just hit a milestone, opened 2 years and 2 months, and we have had 700,000 people through that museum. And so it's almost 1,000 a day. Yeah. And the demographics there, we get a lot of families, a lot of, mom, dad, and the kids coming through. Right. And it's just great. And you see the parents pointing out the different things to the kids, and then the kids taking them by the hand and saying, come over here and see this.
How do we get more info about that museum?
That museum, all the NRA museums are at the website, nramuseums.com, or you can go visit the museum in Springfield, Missouri at the Bass Pro headquarters shop there. It's open every day of the year except Christmas, and admission is always free at all three of the NRA museums.
I emigrated from Venezuela, one of the most dangerous countries in the world today. A few years ago, the government came for our guns. We were told we would be safer without them. Of course, the politicians, the rich and famous, their bodyguards and criminals, they still have their guns. Everyone else lives in fear. Mothers and fathers are powerless to defend their families. But the drug cartels and gangs, the colectivos, still have all the guns they want, and 90% of murders are never solved. The biggest mistake Venezuela's made was believing that this could never happen. Today, they would do anything for the Second Amendment freedom that we enjoy as Americans. Never, ever take it for granted. I am the National Rifle Association of America, and I am freedom's safest place.
You and I didn't choose to be targets in the age of terror, but innocents like us will continue to be slaughtered in concert halls, sports stadiums, restaurants, and airplanes. No amount of bloodshed will ever satisfy the demons among us. These cowards dream of inflicting more damage, more suffering, more terror. No target is too intimate or too sacred for these monsters. They will come to where we worship, where we educate, and where we live. But when evil knocks on our doors, Americans have a power no other people on the planet share. The full-throated right to defend our families and ourselves with our Second Amendment. Let fate decide if mercy is offered to the demons at our door. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler. Ken Jakes in studio with us this afternoon. Doug Ritter from Knife Rights with us on the landline. Doug, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Always a pleasure to be with you, Cam.
Well, it's good talking with you as well. And what is going on in New York City? I'm looking at a headline here from the truthaboutknives.com. It's go time in New York.
It is indeed. After, 5 years in our lawsuit and 3 years trying to get legislation through the New York legislature up in Albany, we finally have a chance to fix the problem for good and by changing the definition of a gravity knife, by clarifying it so that it clearly does not cover common pocket knives. And we need to convince Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan to let the Senate vote on this.
Is there a legislative deadline that we're running up against here, Doug?
No. There is no legislative deadline. There is a practical deadline that if we don't get this done in the next few weeks, it probably won't happen. So it's pretty urgent that we get Senator Flanagan to allow a vote in the Rules Committee, and we expect if we can get to the Senate floor that we can get this passed. The Assembly, the Democratic-controlled Assembly, is already on board.
Really?
I couldn't make that up. this is a pretty rare situation in New York where the Democratic-controlled assembly, where these bills originated from, is actually in favor of it because, I mean, ultimately it's their constituents who are most at risk of being arrested. I mean, of the 60,000-some innocent, honest, law-abiding knife owners that have been arrested for carrying a pocket knife, the vast majority are their constituents.
Talking again with Doug Ritter of Knife Rights. So, Doug, tell us again, what is the law in New York City right now? Why is this law, as it's written, so bad?
Well, the law isn't bad. It's the fact that the New York Police Department and District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr. have twisted the law in such a way that they say that all these common pocket knives that, you know, represent 80 or 90% of the knives sold in pocket knives sold in the United States today are illegal gravity knives. The law isn't bad. It's just being twisted by politicians who have a different agenda. All we're trying to do is clarify the law so that they can't twist it.
And so they are defining, or they're viewing a gravity knife as what? Basically any knife that you can open with a flick of the wrist, no matter how many times it takes to do it, to lock into place, no matter how much force is required, no matter if an ordinary person couldn't do it. They're trying to expand that definition as broadly as possible.
Yes, and a wrist flick is not a appropriate test for whether or not a knife is a gravity knife. They've sort of made this up, and some of the lower courts have gone along with it. And they just keep arresting people. I mean, hundreds of people every week for simply carrying a pocket knife. It's just ridiculous. And this legislation, this bill, should fix this problem. But we need to convince Senator Flanagan, Majority Leader Flanagan, that he needs to allow a vote on this.
So what would you like to see the law read to correct this?
What the law reads is, what the bill adds to the law is a statement about bias towards closure. All common pocket knives that are not gravity knives, that are not automatics or switchblade knives, have a bias to closure, so they don't open in your pocket. And all this does is clarify that there's an exception in the gravity knife law and the switchblade law that accepts or extends any knife with a bias towards closure, a resistance to opening. And with that in there, there's no way that the DA and the New York Police Department can twist the law like they have and say that a wrist flick is an appropriate test, because all of these knives that they say are gravity knives and which are not, they all have a bias towards closure. They all have a resistance to opening.
Talking to you with Doug Ritter of Knife Rights. Doug, I'm curious, you know, we've seen stories about an increase in knife attacks in New York City this year. Has that, caused political trouble? Is there a reluctance to deal with this, to deal with knives when we're seeing an increase in slashings? You know, and a lot of these are razors. These aren't pocket knives that we're talking about. But is there any political reluctance to tackle this because of what's going on in New York City?
We haven't seen it so far. Everyone understands that the vast majority of these slashing attacks are being committed with kitchen knives. Nobody's talking about banning kitchen knives. I mean, that's where the majority of these crimes committed with knife, that's what is used. You know, the rest are an occasional machete, some razor blade or box cutters, but it's mostly kitchen knives. And this has nothing to do with kitchen knives. These are the knives that everybody carries every day for use at work and recreation and at home. And the politicians, at least to this juncture, seem to understand that.
Well, as you say, if the assembly is supporting it, that would indicate that, again, you've managed to hit that sweet spot provide some education to these folks about what the issue really is. All right, so you're asking that folks right now contact the Senate president there in New York State?
Yeah, if you live, work, or travel in New York or New York City, we'd like you to call Majority Leader Flanagan today. The number is 518-455-2071. All of that is up on the homepage of Knife Rights at kniferights.org. And we'd like you to ask him to please hear, allow a vote on our bill, S6483A. That simple. Very short, quick message, and you're done. And the more calls they get, the more likely Senator Flanagan is going to allow a vote.
All right. Well, listen, Doug, I appreciate you coming on the program, sir. I know that you have been fighting this for a long time, and the lawsuit still continues, does it not?
Yes. I mean, we have to take a belt and suspenders approach to this. I mean, first of all, when we started the lawsuit, there wasn't a snowball's chance in hell that we were going to get anything done in the legislature. But there's been so much publicity as a result of this lawsuit that they finally took notice 3 years ago. I mean, we've been trying to get this bill passed for 3 years, and until this year, it's been the Republican-controlled Senate that's been in the way of getting it done. Now we're on the precipice of getting it done. We just need to push them over.
All right, Doug, listen, thank you so much for coming to the program, sir, and hopefully we can have you back on talking about a successful effort there in the Senate.
Super. Thank you, Cam. You guys take care.
Thank you, Doug.
Bye-bye.
Doug Ritter joins from Knife Rights here on NRA News, Cam and Company. Meanwhile, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reporting just a couple of days left in the legislative session down in Georgia. Hopefully, gun owners down there have contacted Governor Nathan Deal about the campus carry bill, House Bill 859. Lawmakers will be in session Tuesday and Thursday, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution says, and they say if history holds, sine die will come late with a final rush of legislation before House Speaker David Ralston and Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle declare the session over. And the Atlanta Journal-Constitution says, as is tradition, lawmakers left a lot of the heavy lifting to the end. Yeah, this happens a lot.
Yes, it does.
State legislatures around the country, you get to the closing 48 hours and all of a sudden
there's just a
right.
Right.
And it's what can you get through and what dies on the vine there in the last waning days. Hopefully, again, we'll see House Bill 859. And the Atlanta Journal-Constitution points out that can't be changed because the bill's on the governor's desk. So lawmakers, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution says, would have to write the fixes that Governor Deal wants to see into other pieces of legislation. The question is whether they want to do that or just let Deal decide on the original bill. Now, again, the bill is there before the governor, so hopefully... again, you've been able to, as a Georgia gun owner or the parent of a Georgia student.
Pick up the phone. That's the big thing is these politicians and representatives, they don't get a whole lot of phone calls. So when you do call, it makes a difference. Every single phone call makes a difference. So pick up the phone and call.
Absolutely. And you're right, because you only hear from, even via email, you only hear from a very small portion ever of your constituency.
Right.
Most people just don't.
Or they talk to other people about what they would like to say to their elected officials.
But they never say it to their elected officials.
Exactly.
You're exactly right.
It makes a big difference.
In fact, in Virginia, it was interesting when the Attorney General, Mark Herring, said, all right, all your reciprocity agreements are going away, save for a few. We'll keep a half dozen or so, but I'm taking away all the rest of them. We talked with a couple of lawmakers in the state, and they said their phones were melting down on this issue. People that they never heard from about anything were calling their office and saying, hey, what's going on here? And coincidentally or not, it was about 10 days after Mark Herring made his decision when we saw Governor McAuliffe say, hey, you know what, I think we can do something here, work on this.
Right.
And now we've got a law in place that I think will expand right to carry reciprocity across the state of Virginia.
Sure.
I don't think that would have been possible were it not for the immediate reaction from gun owners across the state of Virginia and even those outside of the state of Virginia, because, you know, your colleague Bob Owens lives down in North Carolina.
Right.
We had lost reciprocity, or we were going to lose reciprocity with North Carolina.
Wisconsin as well.
Right. And, you know, if you see, we don't go to across the border right into Wisconsin, you know, but there are a lot of people on the border of North Carolina and Virginia.
That's
and they'll
true.
Go back and forth. They'll
right.
shop, you know, same with West Virginia.
Sure.
And those agreements were gone. And absolutely it makes a difference. So, again, hopefully people are making their voices heard there in Georgia. House Bill 859, we will definitely be keeping our eyes on that bill over the rest of the week in the waning days of the legislative session. Now, when we come back, after a quick timeout, we've got Jen Jakes of Bearing Arms with us in studio. Friday, we had Jen Jakes of Bearing Arms with us at the NRA range with some of the women from the Independent Women's Forum.
It was so great.
Let's talk a little bit about that when we come back.
Yes, let's.
All right, stick around. We've got more NRA News Cam & Company, sponsored by Nosler, coming up right after this.
Speaking to our good friend John Anoni, the 2 Million Bullets and Camp Compass. John, welcome back to NRA News. How are you, my friend?
I am on top of the world.
How's Allentown?
Allentown is in need of some improvement, and I guess that's why I'm there.
Amen, brother. So first, before we get in, you got some neat projects I want to talk to you about. Yeah. But tell folks, what is 2 Million Bullets and what's Camp Compass? What do you do?
2 Million Bullets is actually an orange-ribbon campaign to prioritize our children in the youth shooting sports. That as well as Camp Compass, which is a nonprofit that rewards inner-city kids with outdoor excursions, basically hunting and shooting.
How long have you been doing this?
Ooh, I've been grinding a long time, 20 years. 20 years, 22 at the camp. I've been in the classroom for another 27. So we tend to say that there is nobody walking this earth that knows kids better than I.
Yeah, I would say that's true. So let's step back for a second before we talk about your new project. How did you get into all this?
You know, it wasn't by my choice, actually. You know, sometimes this road that I'm on is a pretty lonely road because saving kids is not an easy thing, especially, you know, you might as well put devil horns on me because not only do I save them through using the gun, but I save them through killing stuff.
Wow.
Basically our critters, you know, so it's
God's
something
little
where,
creatures, yeah, John. What kind of person are you?
You know, according to my kids, a pretty darn good one, you know, it's something where, you know, I found this because of a need. And wanted to make sure that other kids who had the same need, you know, have that fulfilled.
Awesome. So what did that lead to first? What's the timeline?
You know, Camp Compass, you know, I actually started out of the back of my truck in 94. Just thought the books weren't cutting it and needed to reflect on my life to see what made a difference in my life. And, of course, it was shooting. And it was hunting non-traditionally, of course. With that... went back into the classroom to teach to try to help and just figured out that it was something that I needed to give back.
Well, I'll tell you what, John, I've been talking to a lot of people about this. What you're doing now and been doing for 20 years couldn't be more important now because there's a lot of talk about not only about hunter numbers, and some people say they're going up, they're going down, but it's not just that. It's just attack on that lifestyle, on hunting, on the outdoor sports, on shooting, like from people on the other side who have really ramped up the rhetoric. Your devil horns, John, are growing bigger and bigger and bigger because they think you're so evil.
You're right. And you know what? If I could kind of counter that a little bit, you know what's starting to be a pretty neat role that's starting to happen is people on the other side are starting to come to me and say, you know what? I'm looking at this a little differently because you're saving our kids. And you know, it's something where it's hard to be the king of both mountains, but I can tell you that there are some people on the other mountain that are starting to climb up mine because they understand that our kids, their lives are critical, and they want to see ultimately kids win just like we do. And
absolutely.
I think we're starting to convince some people that what we do is a pretty good thing.
Awesome. All right, so let's talk about the new camp. What do you have going on? Something new.
You know what? Actually, we have a new documentary that is coming out called Camouflaging Our Differences. Pretty strong title. And I say that with excitement because I think we get a knock in the industry in regards to who the industry is, you know, who the industry is portrayed to be. And I can tell you, I walk the halls and I meet with people constantly that are of color and of non-color, and I can tell you what, the bottom line for us is kids. So that's the reason we decided to name it Camouflaging Our Differences. It may shake some people up a little bit because they might be a little uncomfortable. However, change is coming.
Sometimes, John, people need to be shaken up a little bit.
Well, and I don't do it, because I get a rise out of it. I do it
no,
because
I
it's,
mean
it's,
with respect.
No, understood. Yeah. I do it because, you know, it's necessary for me to save kids' lives. And, you know, I could walk 30 kids through this hall today. And they would receive the same love that I would get, probably even more, because once again, our people want to see these kids win, not necessarily in a pro-gun agenda, but in life.
Right. All right, John Anoni, 2 Million Bullets and Camp Compass. How do we get more information about all the great things that you're doing?
You know what? You can look me up on those sites, 2 Million Bullets, 2millionbullets.com.org, or Camp Compass. .com or .org, and you'll find me there.
John Anoni, thank you so much for what you have done and what you continue to do, and thanks for visiting us here at NRA News.
Ah, pleasure.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company. Amelia Hamilton talking about the retelling, a reboot of a classic fairy tale, because that's what we do. Now we reboot stuff. Hansel and Gretel have guns, Amelia says. We'll talk with Amelia about that next hour. In studio all afternoon long, Jen Jakes of Bearing Arms is with us. You can't, got to put the phone down now.
Right.
We're on the air.
Everyone says to my husband, how do you deal with her? Because she's always going like this.
I was going to see, I was keeping track. I wasn't going to say anything, but I was just going to keep track of how the tweet production declined during the course of the show, because it's hard.
It is hard.
I feel bad. I know that I should tweet more during the show.
It's hard
when you're talking to formulate words and write them down and then
right?
tweet them out and write other
I'm
way.
Thinking about this, but wait, I need to be doing this.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm a little bit of a unitasker when it comes to the show, but that's
but it's
just
a
how
good
it
task.
It is a good task, and hopefully it works well.
It does.
I think we're gonna have to change your camera shot though. During the next break, there's too much empty space behind you. It's messing with my feng shui. We have to point the camera that way. So
I'm non-feng. I'm unfeng.
It's the backdrop. It's okay. Just the backdrop. It's an unfeng backdrop. I saw them open up for Billy Squire, I think it was.
Oh.
83. So Friday, you were out at the NRA range with us.
That was great.
That was awesome. I'm really glad that we issued the invite. I'm glad you were in town.
Me
and
too,
just having to work out because Julie Gunlock, you and Julie are Cam and Company friends, and you're friends on social media, mm-hmm. but you never actually met.
We've
in
never
person.
Met, and it was just like meeting a long lost sister. And I'm just like, Julie, oh my gosh. And yes, we were over in a little corner in the range, just kind of catching up. But that was really fun to shoot with those girls and watch them get comfortable with the guns.
Don't be sexist. They're women.
I know, you know.
That's a microaggression.
It really.
I'm feeling oppressed right now.
But is it if I'm a fellow woman? If a snowflake falls in the...
We'll have to go to the Student Justice Organizing Committee for a ruling on that,
they
I think.
They really should.
Yeah, I think they do. It's just constantly changing. Whatever makes people feel the most uncomfortable.
By the hour.
Right? Exactly.
Wait, now this
yeah.
is...
So anyway, so you were there. You had a good time.
I did.
I thought it was really interesting that, you know, a lot of times when we go to the range, people have never shot before. But everyone
Every
had
one of
shot.
Them. But again, it's you have this big segment of new gun owners who have shotguns before, either their grandfathers, their dads, their moms, whoever it may be, and now they're stepping into becoming gun owners themselves, which is exactly where I am too. I've always shot guns, grew up around hunting and firearm safety and things through my dad and our family, and now I'm a gun owner, and now I'm taking classes, and I'm stepping into it myself. But you could see these girls were a little timid when they came in, like, oh, I don't know which one I want to start with, and kind of sitting back and assessing the whole, taking it all in.
Right.
And then by the end of our time at the range, they were like, wait, I want to do that one. Wait, can I go? And they were...
10 more minutes.
Right.
Right, yeah.
And they couldn't wait to shoot another one. They were comfortable, and the range instructors are so great down there, and it was awesome to see how excited they were and comfortable, very comfortable around them.
Yeah, and I, our fantastic photographer and editor, Danny Lyons, is working on this piece, so you'll mm-hmm. be able to check it out on NRA News here in a few days. But I hope that that's something that Danny's camera was able to capture, was that almost trepidation
right.
going in of, okay, I'm nervous, I'm here and I'm excited, but I'm nervous. It's been a while since I've shot. Is there going to be a lot of kickback? What's the, you know, what's going to happen?
Right.
And it was very orderly at first. It was like, okay, so who wants to go first? And Julie, I'll go first. And then who wants to go second? And then, as you say, after about 10 minutes, after everybody had, you know, a chance to to shoot, right, and to get acclimated.
And then it started with one lane. Did you notice that?
And then it moved to two, then it moved
to three, and it just kept spreading out. And the girls were like, wait, I don't want to wait in line. Okay, I'm going to try this. I'm going to go over here. And, again, comfortable because we had the instructors there, and we were there for the girls. And they were
– Women.
Women, you know, right. I can't. You would think that feminists would just jump on board.
I'm telling you, you're going to be the subject of a Media Matters article. Just so you know.
Yummy.
Jim Jakes calls women girls. I'm just saying it's coming. So.
Whatever.
Go ahead.
Bring down.
Sorry, I didn't mean to step on your train of thought. There.
I just thought it was.
That was a microaggression. I know, and I apologize profusely for that.
Well, it is my position here that you're attacking, obviously. No, I mean, they were excited, and it was great to see Julie shoot. Neither of us knew that she used to shoot.
Competitively.
Who knew?
Right?
And she was great, and you could even see her get that little twinkle back, like, all right, I'm doing this, and she was excited to do it, and I hope she gets back into it, because it really is a lot of fun.
Well, I'll tell you, as we were wrapping up and we were saying our goodbyes, they're already talking about
coming back.
About they want to go shoot Sporting Clays. They're like, we got to get together. Cam, you can come if you want, but we're going to get together. We're going to do a Sporting Clays event. So, yeah, it definitely, you know, one of the women that we were talking to said, you know, it's been a while, but this is before we went into the range. She said, it's been a while, but I'd like to think it's like riding a bike, right? And then I think she realized how much fun it was to ride a bike.
And it is fun to ride a bike, but again, who does it anymore? It's like friending. Nobody friends anymore. We need friend camp because everybody just kind of tweets and sends messages.
Right.
Nobody friends anymore. So we need people who
maybe
are
maybe should have Camp Cam and Company. Right? Kind of like
attend.
The you know how they do the cruises right?
In Alaska?
But this would be like Camp Cam and Company. It'd be like friend camp. Just come, you have outdoor activities, goats to play with.
The baby goats. And I say that with my Wisconsin accent. The baby goats are so cute. Thank you for letting me hold them last night.
You're welcome. Thank you for putting them down eventually. That was nice.
It was
that
hard.
You didn't run off with them right away. I know that they're going to be gone. I know that you're going to take them in
your carry-on. I did bring an extra suitcase.
Yeah.
Just in case.
So Jen drove down last night just in time for our St. Patrick's Day feast.
So good.
And we do have baby goats who were born Ides of March, so they were 5 days old at the time, and they were awfully fluffy.
And I am the goat whisperer.
She really kind of is, I have to say. The goat was actually purring in your arms. Just, he didn't want to let go.
I make things happy. That's my job. It's just that nice.
It was a connection.
Right?
Unfortunately, these goats are already spoken for.
Oh, I know.
I know.
But there are more coming.
There are, so we'll see. We'll keep our fingers crossed.
I have to rile up that mama goat. Get it really excited.
I'm telling you, you can take it on the plane with you. It can be your emotional support goat.
Oh, my gosh. That is an article in and of itself. This is my emotional support goat.
You probably fly free, I think, with an emotional support goat.
If they're that cute,
if they're right,
they would just say, go right ahead, Mrs. Jakes. You're fine. Get on.
You have to sit up front, though, so we can all pet the goat.
Right, and hold it up every once in a while so everyone can go, aww.
Exactly. You know, why do you think that I am, what was the phrasing of the LA Times?
The calm. What are you?
Alarming news from a...
Calm, steady voice.
Calm, steady voice. It's just because I go home and I cuddle baby goats. That's all.
That would do it for me.
Helps, you know.
Mellow.
Be stable. Exactly.
Very mellow.
You can come home. I'm telling you. I honestly, when we had the last batch of baby goats in the house, you could come home and the world just be off and you're like walking in. Oh, it's falling apart. It's all falling apart. Oh, baby goats. Come here, baby goats.
In sweater arms.
Right?
They're so cute.
In like 30 seconds, you're okay.
You're better.
Right?
Even Bullet was... pretty cool last night, the walking ottoman,
our big dog boy.
Yes.
Yeah, he's a very good boy. He is not quite used to being the third cutest thing now on the farm. He's a little perturbed by this, but he's a good boy. I'm only sad that, and I know you did a ton of shooting this weekend, but I'm only sad that you didn't get there early enough that we could do some shooting as well, but I want to hear more about your classroom training this weekend.
That was great. Yeah.
So this is up in Culpeper, as you said, right?
Yes, with John Murphy, who is an excellent instructor. And I did two classes with him. I did the conceal carry foundation skills and then the street encounters, which was really in-depth. And I truly believe that anyone who is in possession or looking to get a concealed carry permit should attend some of these classes, not just one, some of them, because you really do learn something new every single time. And he takes you through, you know, how are you going to carry, what are you going to carry, the legality of actually pulling your weapon, which I think a lot of people aren't cognizant of right now, that you are carrying a loaded weapon. And if you do need to pull that weapon, what happens next?
Mm-hmm.
What is an appropriate time to pull it? Are there other options? Should you try other things first? So he really walked us through different things, you know, and we had to yell things and get a little uncomfortable. And it was interesting because I don't usually yell at people. So.
No, you're pretty nice, actually. Were you the only woman in the class?
I was not. On Saturday, there were three other women out of 14. And then on Sunday, it was two of us, but it was a smaller group.
Okay.
But really good. And it was cool because it was both days it was a husband and a wife. But the wife was doing a great job. I mean, she was really showing up.
Interesting.
So I like that. And one of them was a birthday present for the wife.
Yeah.
That the husband and wife took it together. And I thought, man, that's really neat. He also has a two-person skills class that you can take, because what happens if you and your spouse are carrying? Do you have a plan? What would you do? Which way would you go? You know, these are things we don't really think about. So taking these courses and hearing from instructors of these are other instances, here's how this worked, you need to think about that, and having that discussion with your significant other are very important.
Okay, so it strikes me that, you know, as you're talking about this, if there are people maybe who are tuning in because of the LA Times story and they're like, this is their first time, then there might be some people listening going, oh my God, you all are so paranoid. Why would you need to do this? Why would you spend a Saturday thinking about all of the things that could go wrong in your life and how many ways you could be attacked? And you actually have to go sit in a classroom and learn about, you know, street encounters? Really, Jen? Are you that paranoid? What do you say to someone who says, Jen, come on, you live in Wisconsin, for goodness sakes. You're fine.
Right. Things happen in Wisconsin. That's what I would say. And
they all involve, like, Kurds being thrown at people, right?
The Kurds are good. Most people would not throw them unless it was in their mouths.
Right.
Exactly. No, but I mean, obviously, I work at Bearing Arms and I write stories every single day of people who are defending themselves, whether it's with pepper spray or a knife or a stun gun or a gun. And bad people do bad things. Does it make you a bad person that you plan ahead to protect yourself, to protect your family? It does not. Do you have fire extinguishers in your home? Do you plan ahead for tornado drills? Do you plan? I mean, these are all things, you know, parenting or baby-proofing your home. Every parent does that. So I am kind of, you know, victim-proofing my family, or at least trying to. And it's just another way of protecting myself and my family. I would just tell them, go to one of these. Go to one of the courses. Go take a class and see what they're teaching, because it's very informative. And if you want to be prepared and you do not want to become a victim or watch your children become a victim, which is even worse in my opinion, then be prepared.
Talking again with Jen Jakes from Bearing Arms, who's going to be with us in studio all afternoon, Amelia Hamilton. From the Growing Patriot series of books, but she's also reworking and retelling some classic fairy tales with a pro-gun twist, and this has some people all in a tizzy. So we'll talk about that with Amelia next hour. Tim Lee with the Center for Individual Freedom coming up with the Liberty Update, Congressman Mike Kelly of Pennsylvania. And at the top of the hour, why don't we talk a little bit about this LA Times story? You want to?
I really do.
Okay. We'll do this. As I said, about 3 months ago, Noah Bierman of the LA Times came in. We had lunch, an interview, and he sat and he watched the broadcast, and we have a story here. I do have to say, we got like 90 seconds or so. I want to thank Noah for taking the time to come down to Farmville and for interviewing me in person. Kind of wish that more of it had been included in the story, but that's okay. You got to get your quotes from Media Matters for America in, right? You got to have
right.
balance. So
that's what matters.
Yeah, there were some quibbles and some issues that I have with the story, but I also thought that there were some parts that were pretty good. So I suppose Noah would say, well, that's good. There were some parts he liked. There were some parts he didn't like. That must mean I did a good job. So
exactly.
We'll talk more about it coming up in hour two here on NRA News, Cam and Company. Also coming up in hour two, we'll give you more of the latest legislative news. We're talking about what's going on in Georgia where the legislative session is drawing to a close. And we still have campus carry on the governor's desk. We'll also talk about what's going on in the tiny state of Rhode Island, where the legislature there may be overwhelmed and inundated with stacks of multiple bills relating to firearms, both good and bad. We'll talk about that coming up next hour. How do you feel about President Obama in Cuba? You think that sends a pro-freedom message, Jen?
Not really.
Okay, we'll talk about that as well. And some legitimately good news as well out of Iowa, where the Iowa State Senate has okayed a suppressor bill. Those stories and much more all coming up right after this here on NRA News, Cam and Company.
It's really an honor here to have Taya Kyle here. You walked through this this SHOT Show, and the people, like, as you were coming here to our set, you're stopped, like, every 5 feet. People just want your picture. They want to talk to you. But you were recently part of the CNN town hall on guns, and you asked the first question of the president, so I'm sure a lot of people who didn't know who you were now know who you were. You know the power of CNN, of course. Did you get mostly a positive or a negative reaction from people who've never heard of you before?
That's a good question. I haven't, if they felt negatively, and I'm sure there are plenty who did, I haven't heard from them, and I don't know if it's because I'm not out there looking for the negative comments necessarily,
right.
Or if it's because the people who feel negatively haven't wanted to necessarily come up and talk to me.
Yeah.
I did get, right after the show was over, there were some people who came up and very respectfully were very kind, yeah. But kind of told me their views on their loved one that had died, and that right. they felt maybe a different form of background check would have helped more, and they were open to having a small dialogue about it, and I was glad for that, because I think that's part of the problem, is that there isn't enough respectful dialogue of both anybody's opinion. Can we not just talk about it and not be hateful about it?
Yeah. You know, you're here at the shooting industry trade show. Your husband was associated with shooting, of course, American Sniper. He was killed by a gun that is represented here at the show. Do women and people go up to you and say, how can you support an industry that led to the death of your husband? And what do you say back to them?
Well, it's an interesting thing. Like, you know, as you said, a gun that killed my husband, right? It wasn't the gun.
Right.
And it was the person. And I know that sometimes people feel like that's a trite difference, but I've gone over and over it in my mind. And I think you do that anytime you lose somebody you love. And I think the Chris's and Chad's case, Chad was killed with Chris, is a little bit different in that this is a person who was an armor. The murderer was an armor in the military. He had access to guns all the time and never killed anyone. When he got out and started making different life decisions, and I think from what I heard in the trial, it's my opinion he was enabled a lot and has been seen as the victim a lot. But
yeah.
The biggest thing was that he got out of a lot of trouble by claiming PTSD. And the police would say, okay, well, let's take you to a mental facility instead of taking you to jail. And then they would. In the mental facility, they didn't see any PTSD. What they saw was something other than psychosis, which is kind of a term for drug use. And they would release him because they couldn't talk to the police because of HIPAA laws. I wish they could have said, hey, look, this guy claimed that he had PTSD. That's a legit disease, but that's not what this person has, or a disorder, a temporary disorder situation that you have. So I think we could go to that, and we could also go in Chris's and Chad's instance in particular. His mother, Chris, talked to his mother, and from my understanding, said, would your son like to go to a shooting range? And she said, oh, yes, and didn't explain. What we also learned in trial was that a few months before, he had threatened to kill himself and his whole family, so they had the guns removed from their home.
Right.
And so I don't want to be too long-winded, but I do want to get to that point for you, because I think that's at the root of it. Would Chris have helped him? Yes. But would he have taken him to a shooting range? No. There was information he didn't have. And it wasn't that he had PTSD, because PTSD people don't typically, I mean, I don't know that I know of any cases where they've murdered someone because of that. They've hurt themselves, but not murdered someone else. So there was no threat that Chris could have known. I can also tell you that this person, and I think this is true of a lot of people who murder, that it's not as often a crime of passion. This person thought about killing Chris and Chad on the drive down. He didn't do it because he didn't want to get hurt. At least that's what he said in some of the testimony. And so he waited until their guns were empty. He waited until they weren't looking, right? And so I think that if you boil that all down into all these situations, how do we identify the person who has the ability to murder? Because the gun owners I know, and I know quite a few of them, the human heart is not built to murder.
Welcome back. Hour two of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, is on the air right now. On the program this hour, Amelia Hamilton, author of the Growing Patriot series of books, rewriting classic fairy tales with a modern pro-gun slant.
Which are part of our history.
That's true. They are. And I got to tell you, the original fairy tales, you ever go back and read, like, the original Brothers Grimm?
They're freaky.
Holy cow.
Scary stuff.
Nightmare fuel. I can't imagine. I mean, like...
Being a little kid back then.
Right? And this is... Mom, Dad, can you tell me a story? Sure. This is one of the ogre that eats little children's entrails,
right? That's why they all went to bed on time and listened, because their parents told them one bedtime story.
They stayed in bed. They didn't get out until daylight, right?
Moving.
Exactly. So we'll talk with Amelia Hamilton later on in the hour. Coming up next hour, Hero of the Day, sponsored by AdCorps Defense. Deal of the Day, Good Guy of the Day, Tim Lee with the Center for Individual Freedom, a good guy himself, and Congressman Mike Kelly of Pennsylvania. Join us on the program next hour as well. So I mentioned this story, L.A. Times, front page of the L.A. Times, apparently. I feel
that's impressive.
So special. I have been in Cosmo this year. I have been on the front page of the L.A. Times, right? One lucky Cam. That's the hashtag. And golly, what an honor.
Seriously.
Yeah. So... I have some issues with the story. Not as many as I could have. I mean, it's not like I'm going to go through every paragraph and say, hey, this is what Noah got wrong.
Right.
I think there was some, and certainly you're allowed to take journalistic license, and you're allowed to write the story that you want to write. So I'm not going to, I don't mean any of these critiques as, you know, bashing of Noah Bierman. He was perfectly nice when we came out and talked. But there are some things that had I been writing the story, I think I would have written them a little bit differently.
Right. I do like the headline, though. I really do. Alarming news from the NRA via a calm, steady voice. And I'm thinking, would a shrill, shrieking voice be better? I'm like, what were they looking for? I think it's great that you have a calm, steady voice.
Well, I thank you. And I try to have a calm, steady voice. Look, I think we live in alarming times, quite frankly.
Agreed.
And it's good to have a calm, steady voice. Mm-hmm. You know, when I first got interested in journalism, it was because of I really wanted to be an archaeologist. That's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be Indiana Jones, honestly.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. But then when I was like 14, my mom gave me a biography of Edward R. Murrow. Mm-hmm. And I thought, holy cow, like, that's amazing. You can do that too. You know, you don't have to do it. And then I was realizing that archaeology involved a lot of dusting off things and a lot of slow, meticulous
tedious,
digging,
right?
And I thought, I don't know.
It doesn't sound so fun right
now.
Pretty
interesting. But, you know, Edward R. Murrow was that sort of calm, steady voice during World War II, right? Broadcasting from London, describing the Blitz and the air raids. But he was that sort of voice of, I don't want to say reassurance, but he was a calm, steady voice. He wasn't freaking out about bombs dropping blocks from where he was, right?
Right.
And so I guess to me, that's always sort of been the ideal of who a journalist should be. And I also don't see it in cable television. I see shrieking. I see a lot of controversy for the sake of controversy.
Right.
I don't see a lot of actual reporting. And I don't want to do that. I just think that doesn't serve the audience.
Exactly. And you would be doing the audience a disservice by spinning anything. And therefore, I think Noah's comment saying, or was it Noah's, or who's the steady stream of misinformation? I just think that's horrible. That's absolutely not what's happening here.
Let's see. That was Timothy Johnson of Media Matters
for America.
Well,
and that would probably be why.
Yeah, this was I guess maybe one of the quibbles that.
Well, I have a problem with that. So.
I'm trying to find the quote here.
Is it all the way at the bottom?
Edwards is not really a bomb thrower, said Tim Johnson, who monitors the show as the Guns and Public Safety Program Director at Media Matters. He's a kind of constant purveyor of misinformation.
Which is horrific, because you are reading actual news stories from across the country in which citizens defend themselves with their Second Amendment right.
Well, I would have liked to have seen maybe some examples given,
right?
You know, if I'm a constant purveyor of misinformation,
it should be easy to
rattle off a listicle, you know,
exactly.
Like seven examples of my constant misinformation.
Let's send that to Tim. I would like seven examples.
One would have sufficed maybe in this news story, but that was one of the issues
right.
that I had. I would have liked to have just seen maybe a little bit, you know, like, could you provide an example?
Right.
But we didn't see that. The other thing that I really thought was kind of weird, and a couple of people have pointed this out to me, there's a line in here. Farmville's past includes a prolonged resistance to desegregation. Today it boasts a quaint downtown of brick facades that mixes a few vacant storefronts with a diner, a bakery, and a pawn shop with a big sign in the window advertising guns and ammo not far from the NRA studio. You had a chance to walk down the main street
yes,
of Farmville today, right?
Yes.
So, I was surprised that there was no mention of Greenfront Furniture, which is, you know, big part of the downtown
exactly.
area
mm-hmm.
and a big draw for people to come in. But the other thing is, you know, look, it is true. And I was talking with John Cardillo about this on his program earlier today. Not many people know this, but the Brown versus Board of Education case, the majority of plaintiffs in that case didn't come from Topeka, Kansas, which is where Brown, you know, that was the Board of Education.
Right.
There were a number of cases that were combined in the Brown versus Board of Education. The largest number of individual plaintiffs came from Prince Edward County in Farmville. And there was actually a student walkout of the black high school in Farmville over the conditions there. And after Brown versus Board of Education was decided, this was the home of massive resistance. For 5 years, the public schools closed rather than integrate. Farmville has come a long way. And what's fascinating, I know none of this when we moved to the area. This was all news to me. And again, it's one of those reminders like, wow, what don't we learn about in school?
Right.
You know? So I knew none of this. But in talking with people around the area, there were surrounding counties where integration went off without a hitch, which made me realize, you know, that this was integration was a very local issue. It had its federal element, and we learn about things at the 30,000-foot level. But
sure.
But this had, in communities across the country, the story of integration, the fight for integration, the fight for civil rights played
much
out
different.
Very differently,
right?
Depending on where you lived. Here, I got to tell you today, Farmville is a fantastic place, and you would never know that this was the home of massive resistance. You've got people in the community who I think, you know, generally get along, and they want to make Farmville a much better place, and I think it is a growing community. So I thought that the community was a little short-changed there with that one line.
I would agree. And I was driving through last night, and it was very late, but I was looking and just thinking, oh, I really cannot wait until the sun comes up, because this is so quaint. It's idyllic. It really is. It's a lovely little town.
It's going to be the home of the vice presidential debate this year.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Longwood University, right up the street from us, as a matter of fact. So we'll be talking a little bit about that as the year goes on. So I had that as a bit of an issue. And then, you know, again, we do 3 hours a day. We do 5 days a week. We are a very guest-driven show. As you know, we don't normally talk about me.
Right.
But I thought that they highlighted Tony Katz, they highlighted Jim Wallace and Chuck Michelle.
They did not highlight any frequent women who love to come on your program.
That would have been nice to see. I would have liked to have seen, you know, I think really our true diversity of guests.
Right.
Because we have folks, again, we have folks like you who work within the industry. We have, you know, victims advocates like
Kimberly
Corbin. Mm-hmm. We have grassroots advocates like Laura Carno. We talk with firearms instructors and competitive shooters. And again, these are just the women that we talk to.
Exactly.
State legislators. You know, I mean, I'm really proud of the breadth of diversity that you get within our audience? Because one of the things I think the mainstream media does a very poor job of covering is what quote-unquote gun culture really is. I don't think there is a monoculture.
No, and I think that people almost, well, I should say, the media is very much shying away from who gun owners actually are.
Right.
You know, they're professionals, they're women, they're men. It doesn't matter at this point. If they're a gun owner, that's who they are. And it transcends every different barrier out there right now because you have such a huge segment embracing their Second Amendment rights.
And absolutely.
They're just ignoring it.
You know, we saw this again when we were at CPAC together. We were talking about this with Antonia Okafor from Students for Concealed Carry.
Great.
And she told us that Marie Claire had interviewed her.
Right.
And that her piece never ran
never
in the magazine. And I remember Julie Golub talking about the same thing a couple of weeks earlier where she said, you know, Marie Claire interviewed me and I guess I didn't make the cut. So
because they don't
want to
hear from smart, intelligent women who are well-versed in what they're fighting for and why they're fighting for it.
And that's right. And I think that, you know, look, I really think that is an issue and I really think that's a problem because, you know, part of the media narrative, I think part of the broader media narrative is, you know, they don't really want to talk about the diversity.
No.
They want, I think, gun ownership to be seen as a very narrow slice of the electorate. And one, by the way, that's getting older and dying off.
Right.
When I think the opposite is actually true. I think the opposite's happening. I think what we are seeing is that gun ownership is becoming more diverse. Gun ownership, when we were at SHOT Show, I was amazed. I'm talking with a couple of firearms instructors from the L.A. area. And
that's wonderful.
Right. And they're talking about, you know, who's coming to their classes. And they're like, yeah, it's like a Benetton ad, you know.
It's everyone, and it's nurses, it's professionals, it's college students, and I saw that this weekend as well. There were teachers in there. There were, you know, one of the gentlemen actually works at the NRA range, and it just kind of ran the gamut, and it was refreshing to see that. I would love to have the media actually cover who these gun owners are because I'm really tired of people like Hillary Clinton saying, I'm coming after the gun lobby.
Yeah, because, well, look, and so this is a thing.
Mm-hmm. That's the narrative.
That is the narrative. And, you know, a few years ago, I think it was 2012, this kind of talking points memo came out, preventing gun violence through effective messaging. And it was a PR firm out of Washington State that had been commissioned by the Washington State anti-gun group. And I think this has sort of become the playbook as to how to communicate if you're an anti-gun activist. And one of the things that they say to do is to draw a distinction between NRA members and NRA leaders like Wayne LaPierre, Chris Cox, right? So the gun lobby, quote unquote, becomes Wayne and Chris and, you know, maybe whoever the NRA president is, and the politicians who are, you know, just helpless pawns to the gun lobby. But the NRA is a member-driven organization.
That's right.
You know, you said something earlier today when we were talking offline about you being the gun lobby.
That's right. And, you know, I know Chris Cox, and I said this weekend to John Murphy. I said, you know what? We don't pump our own septic tank, okay? We pay someone to do that. We understand that it's a job that needs to get done, or it's not going to be very pretty around my house. I pay people like Chris Cox to do the dirty work that I don't have the time, resources, or knowledge of how to do effectively. And that's the bottom line, is they are member-driven. And if it weren't for people like me paying dues and sending in donations and buying T-shirts, then they wouldn't have any money to do anything that they do. But the bottom line is gun owners need to acknowledge that there is an entity out there that is fighting for us that we can pay to do effectively. And they're doing a great job.
Well, you know, and again, I mean, you see, it's a symbiotic relationship because if it weren't for, frankly, if it weren't for the NRA members, then it wouldn't matter how hard Chris Cox worked or how hard, you know, the NRA state liaisons worked because they'd go and they'd have their meeting with the representatives and they'd say, okay, so who's your constituency? Who do you actually, you know, who are you here speaking on behalf of? And they'd say, nobody, really? And, okay, thank you very much. It's because NRA members are involved. It's because they are active. It's because lawmakers know when they are out there meeting and greeting, you know, their constituents, they're hearing a lot of people say, hey, you know what, I'm an NRA member and I really appreciate you working on this, you know, bill. Or conversely, hey, I'm an NRA member and I want to know, why didn't you support this piece of legislation, or why are you pushing this bill? They hear from NRA members. NRA members are active and involved, and they understand that, you know, using your voice in combination with millions of others
is effective.
Absolutely.
And they like to get on the NRA about, well, they're a gun lobby, they're a gun. Okay, but what is Bloomberg? What is Moms Demand? What is Gabby Giffords? What are they doing? Are they not lobbying
for
gun
control? Sense gun safety reform.
Oh,
that's
okay.
What that is.
Well,
that's
ours
not.
Is common sense self-defense under the Second Amendment, so...
No, you're right. There's a the anti-gun groups are going through one of the periodic rebrandings that they go through. You know, they started out, you go back to the 1970s, it was the National Council to Ban Handguns. And that
it
was
worked
the,
in Chicago.
Right, and it worked in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And when that didn't work, when the state of Massachusetts rejected a gun ban statewide in 1976, when... crime didn't drop after the gun ban in Washington, D.C. was put in place, and crime didn't drop in Chicago after the gun ban was put in place. Then it was, you know, okay, well, maybe we're not about banning handguns. That doesn't seem to be working too well. So then we'll be against gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
There. Now, there's no pro-gun violence organization. There's no, you know, coalition for more gun violence.
No.
So we're against gun violence. But it's the same still ideology. You know, they're still wanting to do the same things, smaller scale, because, right, that
it's just repackaged.
Exactly. And so we've seen this periodic repackaging over the years. We've seen the public retreat from things like a gun ban. You won't get, you know, Mayor Bloomberg to say, oh, yeah, I think we should ban all handguns anymore. But you never heard him say, why, that's preposterous. Gun bans, that's unconstitutional. You never heard him say that, for instance, before the Heller decision, right?
No, not at all.
Right now, the trend is to try to portray themselves as reasonable. So they want to talk about things that have been focus tested, right?
Yes.
Like universal background checks. That's all we want.
Yes.
But it's interesting because, you know, you look at states like Washington, where they had a referendum on, quote unquote, universal background checks. It passed. The anti-gun groups didn't fold up their tents and go home. It's not like they said, well, we got what we wanted. We're done here. No, they're out there pushing more anti-gun
There's
laws.
Always more.
And meanwhile, the universal background check law hasn't been shown to be effective or enforceable.
At all. But that's too much common sense.
Yeah. Well, this is, I think, where we kind of are right now in this debate, is that, you know, one side just seems to think that by repeating that phrase, we're common sense gun safety advocates, that eventually it will make it so, or eventually people will believe it.
And
but
we noticed that on the CNN
town hall style
town
event.
Right, exactly, not debate, but it was repeating the same thing over and over and over, the same talking points. It wasn't even responding to any of the questions. He was just kind of talking point. They don't have an actual response. There's no response, because they know if they were to respond truthfully and using common sense and facts, they have nothing. So it's just these continual talking points. That's why we need people like you in a calm, steady voice to inform America, hey, here are the gun owners. Here's what they're doing with their Second Amendment rights. And here's how it's working across the country.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm working on my raw voice, too, but it's coming along slowly. All right, we're going to take a quick timeout. When we return, Amelia Hamilton, author of the Growing Patriot series of books and a author of a new series of retellings of classic fairy tales, Hansel and Gretel Have Guns, is her latest, and some folks are having conniption fits about it. So stick around. There is much more. NRA News Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, right after this.
I'm speaking with Sergeant Major Lance Nutt. He's president and founder of Sheepdog Impact Assistance. Tell us what Sheepdog Impact Assistance is all about.
Well, when we refer to the term of sheepdog, it's referring to one of society's protectors. It's the men and women that serve in the military, law enforcement, fire and rescue ranks. It's that type of man or woman that's willing to put their life on the line for you and me, for everyday service and the things that we live and take for granted. It takes a unique individual to go out there and make sure that we're able to appreciate the freedoms that exist for us. And when we talk about society's protectors, it's truly its sheepdogs, those men and women willing to give it all.
So where did this concept come from?
Well, for us and myself as a Marine of 28 years, it was quickly understanding with multiple deployments under my back and so many of my own Marines and soldiers and sailors that I had served with, seeing the difficulties they had in returning home. Part of that was that continued service opportunity. When you step away from something that means so much to you, and having given so much of your life in service, we felt that we needed an organization that would give you that opportunity to continue giving back to your country. And we initially formed as a disaster response organization and have morphed into so much more that truly defines who and what we are as individuals, our members and our volunteers. But more importantly, we're making sure that those men and women that have suffered a traumatic injury, and that could be emotional or physical trauma, that we give them the opportunity to get up off their butts and continue to live their lives.
It's awesome. Sergeant Major Lance Nutt with Sheepdog Impact Assistance. How can we get more information about your wonderful organization?
Well, we encourage people to visit our website at www.sheepdogia.org, and that's that'll give them an opportunity to learn a lot more about what we're accomplishing and how we're helping these men and women continue on with their lives.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for being on NRA News.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Martha Benita of Liberty Farm is with us as well. It is so good to see you.
It is so good to see you.
And I love the stories. You know, you'd have the moms that were writing into the local newspaper saying, so does this mean when I take the kids in the SUV down to Disney that I'm going to, you know, what am I supposed to do? Yeah. You know, I'm driving the kids down to Disney.
Now you're a felon.
Right.
Because you crossed the state line.
I've got my concealed carry. So I love those stories because these are everyday, hardworking people that just, they're shocked. And then, you know, there were the arguments, well, a lot of people might not even know their rights have been taken away.
Yep, right.
So they're driving along innocently, and all of a sudden they're breaking the law, and they have no idea.
It's horrible.
Yeah,
horrible.
It's not the way that you want government to run.
No.
And again, you're a perfect example of this. When all of a sudden, you know, you realize when the knocks are coming on your door, and, hey, we need to look in your closet, you know, all of a sudden that was sort of your moment of, government's not supposed to be like this, right?
That's exactly right.
And, you know, and again, hopefully it doesn't take all of us becoming the victim of governmental overreach like you were. Hopefully we can learn from your story. And I'm curious, I mean, we've had the Benita bill passed and signed in Virginia,
yeah,
right?
Two
protecting
Benita
property
bills.
Rights.
Yeah.
What kind of impact do you see, not just yourself, because I know that you don't want to take all the credit here,
no.
But in spreading the word about what happened to you and in traveling around the country, are we waking up? Are we
absolutely
more vigilant?
Absolutely. And the polls, I think, are a great indication of that. In Virginia, over a million Republicans voted in the primary. Unprecedented. People are voting that haven't voted ever or have been voted in a decade.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a tsunami. It's a swell of folks that are people all across of great Americans all over the country that are waking up and saying, listen, you know, we're not going to tolerate our rights being taken away.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, coming to you today from beautiful Farmville, Virginia. Site of the 2016 vice presidential debate held just up the street at Longwood University. Right now, I want to welcome to the program the author of the Growing Patriot series of books, our friend Amelia Hamilton. Amelia, how are you doing today?
Hi, doing well. How are you?
I am good. So I have to ask you, are you getting more of a kick out of writing these updated fairy tales or the reaction that you are getting from anti-gun activists?
I think probably the reaction, really.
Good answer.
I kind of suspected
that. Every time I go on Twitter, it's a new adventure.
Right. So you started this series out with a retelling of Little Red Robin Hood, right?
Yep. Little Red Riding Hood. Yep. She goes into the forest, and this time she has her shotgun and is ready.
And again, there was much consternation about Little Red Riding Hood having a gun and why this was even necessary. So now it's even worse, Amelia, because you have Hansel and Gretel have guns. And I don't know how old Hansel and Gretel are in this tale, but they look kind of youngish to me in the illustration that we have here. So we have a lot of consternation about you're teaching about armed children running around the woods with guns, killing witches.
Well, the witch is taken away by law enforcement. She is not killed.
Okay.
The kids do just what they're supposed to do and go get an adult, and law enforcement takes care of that. And really, they're not children. You know, they're old enough to be hunting alone.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a specific age listed, which I think is pretty traditional for a fairy tale, but it's made pretty clear that they're old enough. They're old enough to be in the woods by themselves. They're old enough to be hunting by themselves. So they were kind of older teenagers.
Right. Well, of course, into the mind of an avid anti-gunner, they would be part of the toddler militia that...
sure. They're probably in diapers.
Right, exactly. Right. And so what's even worse is they're hunting, Amelia. They're hunting. Let me just quote if I can here. Mother and father will be thrilled with what we've gotten, Gretel agreed, and they continued walking, giving it one more try. Before long, they heard a rustling in the leaves and slowly turned to see a magnificent 10-point buck drinking from a stream. Gretel readied her rifle and fired. Her training had paid off, for she was able to bring the buck down instantly with a single shot. She and Hansel quickly field-dressed the deer and packed up to head back home, hardly believing their luck. Oh, why are you encouraging such awful behavior,
and
Amelia?
From young women?
Right?
Oh, no.
I know. And I intentionally had the woman shoot the deer because I wanted it to be clear that this was a girl who could take care of herself. It's funny because in the original of Hansel and Gretel, the plot of the story is that the village is starving, so they leave Hansel and Gretel in the woods to starve to death because the parents can't afford to feed them. So I figured in my version they were just going to go
and feed themselves,
exploring some different areas of the woods and see if maybe they could come up with something to help feed the family, which apparently is a million times worse than letting your children starve to death alone in the woods.
How dare you mess with the classics, Amelia?
I know.
These kids should starve to death.
It's a much kinder story.
Yeah, it takes a maybe you're being a real true progressive here by progressing the story to the point where self-determination and the ability to take care of yourself is actually seen as not just a better thing, but even a more realistic possibility than we don't have any food, so sorry kids, it's an option
to starving.
Right.
Yep.
Huh. So what has been the reaction? You say every time you get on Twitter, it's a wonderful experience here. I've seen some of the media in the left have noticed your latest piece.
They certainly have. And what I've been noticing, which I think will surprise none of your listeners, is that no one has actually read the stories. So there's a lot of people upset that, that they shot the big bad wolf or that they shot the witch, which neither of those things happened. People were upset that people were saying, well, they were eating the witch's house, so shouldn't the witch have shot them? Well, they don't actually. They know not to talk to strangers, so they don't actually go and eat the witch's house. It's all things that, safety is a big part of these stories, so they know not to approach the witch's house and start eating the gingerbread. So it's all about, it's not just guns, but just in general safety that they are avoiding all of these horrific situations that happen in fairy tales that are really very violent, in the traditional tellings, that if kids are taught safety in general, all of this could be avoided. But we can't expect, Media Matters or Huffington Post to click and read to find out what happens when they
make
just
too much
a sensationalist
sense.
Headline.
Right.
Yeah, not to mention the readers of places like Raw Story, which has picked this up as well. Because if one of these sites has provided a summary for you, then why do you actually need to click on the source material and see for yourself, right? I mean, it's just so much easier to just just give into the outrage, and we must be outraged about this.
Let it flow through you,
right? And in one of them, the Huffington Post actually changed the illustration on Little Red Riding Hood as well, because it just wasn't quite salacious enough. So.
Oh, really?
Wow.
They certainly did.
Wow. So there's a whole bunch more fairy tales out there, Amelia, that you've not yet written about. Can you give us a sneak peek as to what's coming next?
Up next will be The Three Little Pigs.
I love it.
So even perhaps a house made of straw can still be protected from a big bad wolf. Something
perhaps.
Along those lines, right?
The audacity.
Perhaps it can.
Well,
you'll have to wait until May to see.
Until May?
Yep, every other month.
It's
so it'll come out, and then I'll be at the annual meeting.
Oh, fantastic. Oh,
yeah, so it'll come out just before then.
Well, good. I'm glad that we'll get to see you there in Louisville, Kentucky.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. In the meantime, keep working on this stuff. And if you want to send a draft just so I can take a look at it, you know, before May, I'll be happy to read it.
I'm sure my daughters would love to read it.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Amelia. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks.
Amelia Hamilton joins. You can find the latest fairy tale, Hansel and Gretel Have Gunned, at NRAfamily.org. There you go. Justice Don Willett, one of the best judges on Twitter. He's fantastic,
isn't
he?
He's pretty great, yes.
And I'm not just saying that in hopes that he'll hear about me saying this and follow me back. But,
ditto.
Right. So he noted Justices Alito and Thomas were fired up in today's Second Amendment stun gun case, providing a link to the Supreme Court opinion. So I'm glad to know that there are folks taking note of this decision, and it was an important decision. As mm-hmm. we talked about before, Justice Alito, and he quotes, he highlights one specific part here. So we'll quote what Justice Willis has highlighted, and it is the end, the last two paragraphs. A state's most basic responsibility is to keep its people safe. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts was either unable or unwilling to do what was necessary to protect Jamie Catano, so she was forced to protect herself. Now, keep in mind already what the U.S. Supreme Court has said about the duty of a community to protect you as an individual. Castle Rock versus Gonzalez, the Supreme Court said that basically it doesn't even matter if a order of protection has been taken out, that there is no... you don't get your own personal armed guard. The
right.
police are there to protect and serve the community. And if something bad happens to you, and even if the police should have known that there was a heightened risk of something bad happening to you, they can't protect you as an individual.
Right.
We saw a very similar decision in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals in the early 80s, the Warren decision. Okay, so if it's not up to the state to protect me as an individual... It's got to be up to me, right?
Yes, it does. And people would be very angry with you and with me for saying things like that. But ultimately, it is true. We own our own self-defense. We own our personal safety. We put ourselves in situations, you know, like America's First Freedom. Clay Turner has this piece out about calculating your vulnerability index. Where are you going? What are your challenges? Do you need to protect yourself in this situation? What are you up against? And it's a smart way of thinking. Again, we're not paranoid. We're prepared. And we do have to own our own protection. We'd have to.
Yep. And Justice Alito went on to say in the passage quoted by Justice Don Willett there, Texas Supreme Court member, to make matters worse, the Commonwealth chose to deploy its prosecutorial resources to prosecute and convict her of a criminal offense for arming herself with a non-lethal weapon that may well have saved her life. The Supreme Judicial Court then affirmed her conviction on the flimsiest of grounds. This court's grudging per curiam now sends this case back to the same court, and the consequences for Catano may prove more tragic still, as her conviction likely bars her from ever bearing arms for self-defense. Again, pointing out that here is a woman who was carrying a stun gun for the purposes of self-defense, used that stun gun, didn't have to deploy it, but had it there,
right.
was able to say, you need to get away from me,
or
I'm going
use
to use this,
mm-hmm.
and he got away from her. Because of that, she can now lose her right to bear arms for self-defense. If, Justice Alito said, the fundamental right of self-defense does not protect Caetano, then the safety of all Americans is left to the mercy of state authorities who may be more concerned about disarming the people than about keeping them safe. And by the way, note again, this is just the opinion of Justice Alito. But those are two distinct things. Those are two distinct ideas to Justice Alito.
Right.
Disarming the people and keeping them safe.
Mm-hmm.
One does not necessarily lead to the other.
It does not. And we see stories of it every single day.
So, yeah, I'm glad to see Justice Willis, Justice Willett highlighting those words by Justice Alito. Again, those are the words of Justice Alito, Justice Thomas concurring, but the Supreme Court unanimously telling the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts today, look, the Second Amendment doesn't just apply to the types of weapons that were in use in 1789. The Second Amendment does not just apply to items that could be used on a battlefield by the military.
Right.
And so you've got to go back and rehear this case, keeping in mind what we actually said in Heller and McDonald. And that is a good thing. All right. Why don't we take a timeout? When we come back, we've got more of the day's top stories for you, including the legislative news out of Rhode Island. I want to talk a little campus carry.
Great.
You want to talk about that?
I would love to.
All right. We'll talk more with Jen Jakes of Bearing Arms, who's sitting in with us all afternoon long. Stick around. There is much more in NRA News Cam and Company coming up right after this.
I'm speaking with Kellyanne Pidgeon with Armed and Feminine. Kellyanne, welcome to NRA News. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. Tell folks, what is Armed and Feminine? What do you do and why?
Armed and Feminine is my business that I created to teach firearms training for women only. When I got into shooting several years ago, there was no one I could find that was female, and it was a little difficult because men are from Mars, women are from Venus.
No.
So I went to an NRA training through the Well-Armed Woman and became an instructor, and I came back and started this, and it took off like wildfire. People came from all over the tri-state area. I'm in Pennsylvania, and they loved the idea of women teaching women. You know, we have to know, how does this work? What is it called? What does it do? We have to feel things, touch things, and that's what the entire classes are based around, is women teaching women, because we're different. We have smaller hands. We're not as strong. We're curvier in different ways, totally different on how you have to learn how to shoot.
Right, and especially with certain firearms, the fit, whether it's revolver, semi-automatic, if you're handgun, it's a different fit for a woman's hands versus a man's.
Absolutely, and that's actually one of the draws about my class, is that when someone comes, all they have to do is bring a lunch. I bring everything, eyes, ears, materials, and an array of firearms, and so do my other instructors. So they have an opportunity to pick and choose from all different firearms to see what fits for them. And everything is different, and it's funny, I have a video out that akins the firearm to buying your bra, if we can go there on this segment.
Of course, we always go there here.
And I say that nobody can buy your firearm but you. You know, when someone said, oh, my husband bought this for me, and I just want to roll my eyes and go, really?
Honey, I got you a 44 Magnum. It's called the Dirty Harry Special. Enjoy.
Exactly. And they're never going to want to shoot again. Like,
no.
Guys are like, honey, try this big firearm. So we start with 22s till we get all the fundamentals down pat, and then we move up to 380s and 9s until they figure out what it is that they like. But I tell them, you know, it's just like your bra. It's got to be comfortable. It's got to fit right. You got to be able to wear it every day, and it's got to be able to do its job. So only you can do that.
Perfect. Speaking with Kellyanne Pidgeon with Armed and Feminine. So, Kellyanne, you say you're from PA. What part of the state?
I live near Pittsburgh.
Okay. I'm a PA guy myself, and in Virginia now, but it's always good to have a fellow Pennsylvanian here.
I find them everywhere. Actually, I found a man right who lives not by me from
That's
here.
Awesome. So why was it important that you do? You talked about you didn't find it, but you went way beyond. I can't find a woman to instruct me. You started this whole thing, and it takes a lot of work and a lot of drive.
It does.
What drove you to do this?
I know how much I enjoyed it and what learning this trade did for me in terms of confidence, et cetera. I'm all about mentoring women. I won the Athena Award locally for mentoring women and trying to help move them. And in the classes, I found women who were housekeepers, from housekeepers to attorneys and everybody in between. And what I saw is that women who may be fearful in one way or another, once you teach them how to safely handle a firearm, their confidence just goes through the roof. And if they're having a bad day or they feel like their back's up against the wall for something, they just have to remember, hey, I know how to shoot a gun, and I can do that pretty well. I can do anything. And so, you know, I just enjoy helping people. My real job is in human services, and folks look to me for leadership sort of all the time. And so it was just sort of another calling that I had, and I found it to be a passion. I thought, if I'd only started this 10 years earlier, this would have been awesome. So I enjoy it. I enjoy every minute of it.
How can folks get more information about Armed and Feminine?
Actually, they can visit my website. It's armedandfeminine.com, and all the tabs are there, from frequently asked questions, class descriptions. All my classes are pretty much sold out for the next season. It's crazy. My entire 2016 season sold out in 5 days. 5 days. I had to add more slots to that during the week to try to just meet the demand.
Okay. So before we run out of time here,
sure.
What's your message to women who are watching us going, should I try that? What do you tell them?
Don't be afraid. You can conquer your fears. It's worth it. And we need to move from being the protected to becoming the protector. And women will save the Second Amendment.
Wow. That's awesome.
Well, they will.
That's awesome.
Give me 30 more seconds. Because women who are the matriarchs of their family, whatever they like, believe in, and support, so will their children. And so women are on the move, and we're moving this, and we're going to be a big part of saving the Second Amendment.
Colleen, thank you so much. Keep doing what you're doing. Thanks for being on NRA News.
John, thank you. It was my pleasure.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company. Coming up on the program, top of the hour, Hero of the Day, sponsored by Adcore Defense, Deal of the Day, Good Guy of the Day. Jen Jakes of Bearing Arms with us in studio all afternoon long. You just said during the break, time is just flying by, isn't it?
It is. It's like the best segment ever because I never have to leave.
Well, we appreciate you coming on the program.
Well, thanks for
having
me.
We should probably spend at least a couple of minutes talking a little bit about Bearing Arms and what the message and mission of BearingArms.com is all about, because there are a lot of gun sites out there. But you talk about the fact that, you know, you're not a gun expert. This is you're in the middle of a learning experience, and probably one that will never stop.
I hope not.
But is that a sort of a part of the style and the mission of Bearing Arms to not necessarily be a place where everyone's an expert?
It is now. Even if they didn't intend it. No, Bob Owens, of course, our fearless editor, has done a terrific job of gun reviews, product reviews, keeping people just informed of all the technicalities with guns. And he's been in it a long time. He's a gun guy. And that's the yin to my yang. And my yang is that, that sounded funny, but my yang is that, you know, I grew up in a hunting family. And long rifles always shot and archery and things like that. But now I'm a handgun owner. I have a concealed carry permit. I'm taking training. And there are so many new gun owners and recent gun owners out there just kind of looking for direction. And they want the Second Amendment portion and the news and the stories on concealed carry and things like that. But I think we're giving a really healthy dose of each. And together we work very well. And we're giving people, I think, what they need.
You know, it is a, like I said, it's very hard to be a full service website when you're talking about gun owners, because there are
so many
gun owners and there's so much to cover. People are owning guns for, you know, such a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. And there are so many stories out there. I mean, look, we do 3 hours a day. We don't really talk much about product reviews. We don't, that's not, you know, what's in our wheelhouse, right? But 3 hours a day. We have no problem talking about the latest Second Amendment news and information from, you know, state houses and capitals and courtrooms and the culture.
Right.
That's, you know, you can literally fill in a website and more just on that aspect of it.
It's getting the time to do it.
Right.
There's no shortage of information that we really want to get out there. It's finding time to get it out there. And again, this industry has been completely inundated, not only with gear, but products and instructors and different voices. So it's kind of hard to weed through everything. Bob and I are two voices, and we're doing what we can. I think we're doing a pretty darn good job. I would hope that our readers would agree with that. But, you know, it's just a matter of really believing in the Second Amendment and believing in the products that we're talking about, and wanting new gun owners and old gun owners to know what's going on.
Absolutely. You know, to that end, is there a favorite, do you have certain aspects or certain stories, certain types of stories that you really like to cover?
I love to cover the self-defense, the women. You know, there was a woman in Ohio who had called 911, and 48 minutes later, after she had called two more times, she finally ended up pulling her gun and shooting a active intruder who was trying to get into her house that entire time, shooting him out of a second story window. And she was saying, I did what I had to do. I called the police. I called several times. They were not there for me for 48 minutes or whatever it was.
Right.
And she had to own her self-defense. She had to protect herself. I love stories like that because she did the right thing. She called the police. She tried to get their assistance. They weren't there when she needed them.
You know, it's interesting because these are that's like one of those types of stories that will never end up in Cosmo.
And that's sad because women should know.
Right. Exactly. There was another story out of Ohio last year, and it was a police officer off duty in her home. Ex-boyfriend showed up. She had, I believe, the restraining order out against him. She managed to call 911. And the operator, you know, dispatched people, but you could hear in this 911 call that got released, you could hear her being beaten. You could hear him screaming at her that she wasn't going to live. And she was able to eventually break away, retreat to her bedroom, retrieve her firearm, and shoot and kill her attacker. And, you know, and again, the 911 call got released. This was one of those stories where I kept waiting for
someone to
there
pick
to
it
be,
up, right?
Right, more coverage of this. And there never really was outside of, like, the Cleveland Plain Dealer. I think they were the biggest story or the biggest paper that covered it. And then local TV in Cleveland covered the story. But, again, as you're listening to this 911 call and you're just cringing and you're so scared. Absolutely. And you're just counting the seconds of when will the police get there. And you know that they are racing there as fast as they can.
That is a fellow officer, right?
Right. I mean,
in her case,
nobody's accusing the officers of slacking, but this is what we talk about all the time, that no matter how fast and how quickly the officers want to get there, they're not magic.
Right.
And it's going to take time for them to respond. And in that moment, from the time that if you are able to call 911, from the time that you place that 911 call until the time that officers arrive, again,
things can happen.
Things absolutely can happen. And I don't know how anybody could listen to that 911 call.
Right.
And say, you know what, I wish she didn't have a gun.
Or like you had asked me, you know, what do I say to anti-gunners who say, aren't you just being paranoid? You listen to that 911 phone call. You tell me she's paranoid. She's paranoid for having a gun in her home to protect her.
Well, she's okay. She's allowed to have one because she's a police officer. So that's different.
But she was off duty.
So that's different, see. Oh, that's true, and you're right. We do have anti-gun actions.
Right.
You say that, you shouldn't
should
be able
to
have
able
a gun, right?
Right.
Yeah, just leave it at the station.
There was an Oklahoma woman who all she had on her was a shotgun in her apartment, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And she called 911. She had a baby in the home and said, someone is actively trying to break in. I think it was like 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear the 911 call, and the dispatcher says, you do what you need to do to protect that baby. You're darn right, and I'm a mom, and I would do what I needed to do to protect my babies. And that's a big reason why I carry, because I could not see my children go down without a fight. I just could not.
I remember that story. It was New Year's Eve mm-hmm. / New Year's Day, and she was not only was she a new mom, she was a new widow. Her husband had just passed away at, like, age 24.
So sad.
And she was there in her
all
home.
All she had.
Right? And you're right. And she's on the phone and she's got her baby in one hand and she's got her gun in the other. And these are, you know, again, these are real stories. Mm-hmm. These are real people who were able to act in self-defense. And again, if your position is that, we should have gun storage laws that would have prevented that mom from being able to access that shotgun, or we should have, you know, gun bans in place so that, the mom in Detroit who used a rifle to protect herself and her kids against
right.
Multiple home invaders that, you know, nah, that gun should have been banned. If you're looking for reasons why that individual should not have had that firearm to protect themselves.
It's lost in that 911 call.
Right.
It's literally flushed. When you hear their voices, when you hear the fear and the terror and just the sheer victimization of what is going to happen to me. Until they can pick something up to defend themselves, that's when it switches to, I am not a victim, I am protecting myself. And again, that's not being paranoid, that's being prepared.
Absolutely. And now the Supreme Court, you know, we were talking about the self-defense case that the Supreme Court sent back down to the Massachusetts State Supreme Court regarding stun guns. There was another case that the Supreme Court decided not to hear today regarding the carrying of firearms in post office property and adjacent parking lots. The justices, according to the AP, let stand an appeals court ruling that said the Second Amendment right to bear arms does not extend to government buildings or the parking areas that serve them. This is a case out of Colorado. The Obama administration argued that the Second Amendment does not restrict laws forbidding guns in sensitive places such as schools and government buildings. And the court decided, again, not to hear this case. Takes four judges to hear a case. So that's half the court now. We don't know when this case was ultimately considered, but apparently there were not the four justices needed to revisit this case dealing with the carrying of firearms.
I wish more people would be able to watch Katie Pavlich's special on gun-free zones.
Mm-hmm.
It aired on Outdoor Channel,
Outdoor
I believe.
Outdoor Channel, yep.
That was wonderfully done, very informative, and it really just highlights what gun-free zones do. And all it does is disarm law-abiding citizens from carrying for protecting themselves and others.
Well, you know, it's interesting. So we had on the program last week a history professor at Arkansas State University.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a piece of the Chronicle of Higher Education, which I thought was really interesting, about campus carry. And he said, in essence, even if your campus is a gun-free zone, it's not gun-free.
Exactly.
So you shouldn't be freaking out about the prospect of concealed carry holders carrying because these are, you know, safe, law-abiding, responsible individuals. And you probably already have people who are carrying firearms on your campus right now, either to commit a crime or they're carrying for self-defense and they'll deal with the repercussions, you know, the academic repercussions if they were to get caught. But you know, we don't see this chilling of speech. We don't see all of these, you know, horrible things happening. We don't see fist fights or gunfights breaking out.
Wild Wild West, they keep saying
right?
that.
Exactly, they do. And not in like a cool Modi voice kind of voice either, right? They just keep saying it's Wild Wild West.
Or Dana Lash's new book cover where she's very Wild Wild West.
She is very Wild Wild West. That was going to be my new book cover too, but she took it from me. Yeah, now it's just going to be me and baby goats. So
I would buy that book. That's a good book cover.
I'll call it Scapegoat, and it'll just be like me and baby goats.
You have to have a gun somewhere.
Explanation.
Like in a little
something gunsplainer. That would have to be what it. Yeah.
Gunsplainer.
I'm working on it.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Let's workshop that.
But. So anyway, getting back to the Wild Wild West
right.
mentality there with the campus carry, you know. This professor was saying, just think about it for a second. You know, just think about the fact that there are these people who are likely carrying. You haven't seen this before. I would even take it one step further and say, if you're freaked out about campus carry, are you freaked out about carrying generally? Like, are you afraid to leave the
now,
college
remember,
campus where it's supposedly a gun-free zone.
We do have a professor at UWGB in Green Bay who wrote in his blog that if he is standing too close to a police officer, he will take steps away because that man is carrying a gun. So there are professors out there who are just that paranoid.
Okay. Point taken. There are.
There are.
And we've seen the professors in Texas, one of whom, well, they're not in Texas anymore.
Right.
Because one of them said, I'm going to Australia. And then the other one, I couldn't believe it, said, I'm going to Philadelphia. That's where I'm going.
Good luck
I'm
with
going
that.
To University of Pennsylvania because of these crazy campus carry laws. And there are robberies of college students. There was actually an armed robbery of a college student at UPenn, I think, this calendar year.
There you have
this
it.
School year.
Gun-free zone.
Right? Yeah. And that's what bothers me, I think, the most about that argument, is that this is supposed to be an institution of higher learning.
And it should welcome open thoughts and discussion. It should, but I mean...
And it should have... I mean, it should be home to some people who are capable of thinking critically about an issue.
Objectively.
Right?
You know, at least.
But we don't see it.
No, not at all.
Well, here's the thing, though. We do see it because we do have groups like Students for Concealed Carry on campus. We do have some professors, I think, who are like the Arkansas State professor, capable of looking at this logically.
Right.
And he didn't say, you know, listen, I'm hoping we get it here in Arkansas State so I can go carry my gun. I mean, like
he just had the facts.
Right. But that I don't think is as attention getting.
Of course not.
Right? If you are, again, if you're a reporter and you're covering a story, well, what do you want that story to be? Do you want the story to be about the calm, steady voice who's articulating, you know, the rational reasons why people shouldn't freak out about campus carry anymore? They should freak out about
and the responsible students who wish, like Antonia Okafor.
Right. Or do you want to go out and cover the people who are going to build a book fort? Right?
That's right.
As your gun-free safe space. And you want to cover the professor who says, I'm out of here. And, you know, no student should go to school here in Texas because we've got these laws that are being passed.
And again, like you said, they walk through life every day not knowing that the person next to them could be carrying, because it says concealed carry for a reason. Not everybody open carries. And yes, like in Wisconsin, I think Virginia, Texas, we also have open carry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Concealed carry. You would never think that someone like me is carrying. And that's why, you know, we were talking at lunch today that we are the face of the Second Amendment. We have got to speak out in our communities, with our friends, in our groups, where we are, to tell them, this is how I carry. This is why I carry. I am a responsible gun owner. Come with me to my house. Come with me to the range and be that face. Be the actual gun owner of America to somebody who knows who you are.
Absolutely. All right, listen, hour two has drawn to a close already. Can you believe
Unreal.
It? I know.
Feels like 20 minutes.
Crazy. But hour three is coming up. And we've got the hero of the day, deal of the day, good guy of the day, Tim Lee with the Center for Individual Freedom, Congressman Mike Kelly. We do have some campus robberies to talk about as well, since, you know, it's weird how the criminals just don't respect the gun-free zones that are out there.
They're very rude.
They really, truly are. Stick around. Hour three of NRA News Cam and Company. Jen Jakes and Bearing Arms in studio with us. We'll be back with more right after this.
Speaking with Joel Weens with WSI Sportswear. Joel, welcome to NRA News. How are you?
Great.
All right, so we were talking off air, had an interesting conversation about your product, which is really novel, and where it's been and what you've been doing. And then you brought some by, but this thing, Joel, I mean, it's an incredible product, but this almost looks like a superhero suit. I mean, what is your product? Tell us about it.
Well, we're getting known as the cold weather experts. We're based out of Minnesota. Everything's made in Minnesota.
And everything's cold in Minnesota.
Amen. So I finally figured out that it's cold there, and we got to survive in that climate, and that we've got some great gear for that.
Okay, so we were talking a little bit about football. You're here at a show. It's at the SHOT Show, which is the shooting, hunting, and outdoor industry. So we'll talk about how that relates. But first, you're talking about football. What were you doing with the National Football League?
Well, the past couple of years, we've been working with teams developing cold weather products. So any cold weather game right now, we're being called on to develop the products for that game. And we'll basically break down a game by how cold it's going to be and then make appropriate gear for that. And the Seahawks-Viking game was a super hit for us.
My apologies.
It was a tough day for Viking fans.
A good day for your product, but a tough day for your Viking.
We had everybody on the field, from the referees, the all the filming crew, both teams, and they needed it because it was below 30 below wind chill, and it was a nasty game, but we loved it.
Other than being at Lambeau, being at that outdoor stadium in Minnesota is going to be about as tough as it gets for a football team.
Amen.
Well, that's cool. All right, so before we look at a couple things, let's make the move over. So now you're seeing some interest in the hunting, shooting, outdoor world. What's going on there?
Well, the Made in the USA and our technology, great fit for the outdoor and hunting community and the tactical market. We're getting a lot of calls right now from government agencies looking for our products, since it is made in the USA. And then also the hunting application with, you know, getting out there, getting wet and cold. We've got an excellent product that's going to keep you warm and comfortable.
Perfect. All right, let's take a look at some of the excellent product. You brought a few things that, if I know my buddy Dennis Azzotto over there, this may not be making it back. You know? What do you got here?
Well, my number one selling product is my WicMax heater socks. And then they warm up on the inside. We got socks, gloves, shirts, hats. This is a particular item we made for the Vikings and the other teams. It's a special specialized cold weather shirt.
Is that my wife's size, by the way?
It could be. It could be. We'll find out here. And then this is a special piece that's called my Ignite Series. I actually developed it for Larry Fitzgerald, a good friend of mine with the Cardinals. But it's basically something I designed with retractable gloves and a zipper so you can get into your workout much faster, get warmed up, energized, and it's been a real popular piece.
So let's talk a little bit about where did WSI Sportswear and this technology, how did it all come about?
Well, 25 years ago, I had $3,000. Worked on a farm, southern Minnesota. My mom and grandma said, don't go spending it on a four-wheeler. I said, well, you guys start sewing. I got some ideas. So that's how it all got started. I moved to the Twin Cities, kept growing the company. I always believed in let's make it here in the U.S., and I'm a good example of you can make it here in the USA.
Joel, before we run out of time, how do we get more information about WSI Sportswear?
Our website is WSISports.com. We do have retailers around the world.
Why should people buy this product in 10 seconds? Go.
Well, it's made in the USA. We got great technology, and, you know, we're in Minnesota, so especially for cold weather.
You betcha.
It's coming from the You Betcha people.
Thank you, Joel. Thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for being on NRA News.
Thanks
Appreciate
so much.
It.
Appreciate it.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler. Cam Edwards, your host, Jen Jakes and Faring Arms with us in studio. Tim Lee with the Center for Individual Freedom joining us for this hour. Congressman Mike Kelly as well, talking about his efforts to try to continue a funding ban for the UN Arms Trade Treaty in fiscal year 2017. Plus, we've got the Hero of the Day, Deal of the Day, Good Guy of the Day. Looking on the Twitters. Are you having it? Is it impacting your ability to tweet, being on the show, Jen Jakes?
A little bit, yes. But it's worth it to be here, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad. I mean, I would hope you would say that. But we've talked about this. I have trouble. I was just composing a tweet, and then the music stopped, and I had to start talking. And I'm like, oh, well, it'll be 15 minutes before I can send that one.
That'll go later.
Right.
I thought it was interesting in just the behind the scenes. I was asking you, how do you come up with Deal of the Day, Hero of the Day? Like, and you come up with those, which I think is really neat. I did not know that.
I do. I have, you know, look, Cameron will send me stories and guest ideas, but a lot of the stuff I still do myself. I still am, you know, looking up stories.
I love that.
You know, it started, you know, we've been doing Hero of the Day and Deal of the Day almost since the beginning of the show 12 years ago, because even back then there were stories that got reported and they never went beyond the local news media. And there was no, you know, you'd see it in the American Rifleman. You'd see the Armed Citizen feature every month. But every day we're seeing these stories, so why not talk about them, you know? And then sort of hand in hand with that was, okay, so if we're talking about armed citizens, we're talking about people who are acting in self-defense, well, let's also talk about the other side of the coin. Let's talk about those people who, you know, the gun laws that aren't being fully enforced. Let's talk about those people and how we end up with 23-year-olds with lengthy criminal histories and, you know, multiple charges that get dropped and things like that, and the plea deals that happen every day. And unfortunately, again, there's no shortage of those stories to find. And then when the Good Guys campaign started on NRA News and the cable television ads that were going out, I thought, this is such a cool idea.
It really is.
I want to keep this going every day. Let's highlight just those people. And most of the time, they're members of law enforcement or first responders, but not always. Sometimes they're, you know, people who are just in the right place at the right time, and they step up and they do the right thing. Like, that's sort of the criteria.
We need more stories like that. So I think your viewers really appreciate that.
I hope so. It's, you know, look, it's 5 minutes of positive news, right? And you're right. I think we do need that because, you know, the news media, there's the mantra of if it bleeds, it leads, right? Particularly with broadcast media. And it's, you know, sometimes it's hard work to find these good stories. Now, I will say this, like, Facebook has been, has made finding these stories exponentially easier because law enforcement officers and police departments are doing a much better job of sharing these types of stories because they
recognize.
There's
some great accounts out there.
Absolutely. And they recognize the need to get these stories out there, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been helpful over the last couple of years. But, you know, I think those types of stories are needed. So let's get to it. Let's start with our good guy of the day. No, I'm sorry. I'm doing it backwards. See, you're throwing me off, Jen Jakes. It's all right.
Hands up.
It's okay. Let's start with our hero of the day, sponsored by our friends at Adcor Defense, who were back up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania at the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex. They apparently had such an amazing time at the Great American Outdoor Show that they were back there this weekend for a gun show at the Farm Show Complex. It was great to hear from them. All right, the hero of the day from the Tennessean, a man who broke into a woman's home in Antioch, Tennessee, late on last Friday morning, met with an unexpected surprise when he walked into her bedroom and she shot him, according to Metro Police. Now, I will say this. One of the headlines that I saw originally was, woman shoots attempted burglar. No,
I
no,
saw
no.
That too.
He was in her house. There was no attempt.
Attempting.
That was a
it
successful
happened.
Attempt. He was an intruder at that point. Police say 36-year-old Joshanda Odoms heard repeated knocking at the door of her Waterford Crossings apartment complex around 11 o'clock in the morning. She looked through the peephole. She saw a man that she didn't know. And then she went to a closet in her bedroom. She retrieved a revolver. She was on the phone with a 911 operator when she heard the man come inside the apartment, and moments later, she saw him enter her bedroom. News release from the Antioch Police Department says when Odoms came face-to-face with Hartman at her closet door, she fired one time in defense of herself. Trenton Hartman was the intruder. He showed up a short time later to Vanderbilt University Medical Center with a gunshot wound to his shoulder. The homeowner was able to identify Hartman as the burglar after being shown a photo lineup. Now, here's the thing. This is where the hero of the day story dovetails into our deal of the day, which often happens as well.
Exactly.
Hartman, according to the Tennessean, was free on $4,000 bond for a felony theft charge stemming from his arrest earlier this month in connection to stolen lottery tickets from a local convenience store.
Because why wouldn't he have?
Yeah. So now the $4,000 bond on that felony theft charge has been upgraded to a $100,000 bond for aggravated battery. Now, hopefully this doesn't get plea bargained down.
Well, you said you just started watching The First 48.
I did. Yeah, I don't know how I missed that show, but I
my husband and I love that show.
Binge-watched it.
I always say we eye-guzzled it.
Right.
It's addictive, but you start watching and you see at the end, you know, they got a deal and here's what happened. And you're looking at the entire crime and all the work that went into finding who did it and the heartbreak in the family or whatever the case is. And then you watch the follow-up and it's kind of gone unjustified. It really has. There's no justice.
One of the cases that I saw last week, one of the shows that they had, was a woman in New Orleans who was murdered in her friend's home. Her 4-year-old daughter was there, saw it, murdered by her ex and the father of the 4-year-old child.
Right.
Who had recently been released from prison. She had, I believe, a restraining order out against him. This guy was a career criminal.
Right.
And he ran into that home and he gunned down his girlfriend
in front of his own daughter. Yes.
And when she asked him, why did you shoot mommy? I can't even repeat what he said.
Right. And I've seen that
to
show.
To his daughter.
And it is so disturbing to think that anyone would say that a mother, a father, even, you know, single Americans are being paranoid, are living in fear because they choose to own a gun for protection. Again, listen to the 911 calls.
Yep. So our deal of the day comes from ABC 13, KTRK in Houston, Texas. Marla Carter reporting, as Lante Young and Ross White Leonard stood before a judge on Saturday morning, the DA laid out evidence found at an officer-involved shooting at Affordable Furniture. Investigators say Young, White Leonard, and three other suspects went in to rob the store last Thursday. Police say that when the suspects came outside, at least two had guns and then pointed those guns at officers. Officers shot at the suspects, killing two of them. Another suspect, Barry Jones, suffered non-life-threatening injuries. And the final two suspects arrested there at the scene. Lante Young, according to KTRK, a documented gang member, has a long criminal history. He's been in and out of jail for a decade. In fact, while in court on Saturday, he was also charged with two other robberies, one at a pawn shop, the other at an auto parts store. The robberies happened within the past 5 weeks. In the meantime, Lante Young has been wearing an ankle monitor as part of his bond for yet another robbery case, and investigators were able to link Young to the more recent robberies through the GPS on his ankle monitor. So here's a guy who is right, and we're keeping an eye on him.
Glad that's working.
He's being monitored, Jen, which helps to establish that perhaps he was there at the time that these crimes were committed. But it's not like, see, this is the thing.
But they're doing it because they know they can get away with it.
I know. You're right. They do. And why do they think they can get away with it?
Because they can. Right.
You know, and the public needs to understand. We need to understand. I think we need to do a better job of educating ourselves about the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you hear that somebody is being placed on home detention with an ankle monitor, that doesn't mean that if they leave, like a be on the lookout, all points bulletin gets issued, right?
And what was there was actually a movie with a kid where if he would try to leave, the police swarmed. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Really? That's not what happens.
No. Sadly, a lot of times, you know, days will go by before law enforcement
are even, get to it.
Or before they're even notified.
Right.
Because if this is contracted out to a third party, then it's up to the third party to alert law enforcement that, hey, the alarm has been triggered and the alarm has gone off.
But do people know about this?
I don't think so.
No.
You know, and, you know, look, we all lead busy lives.
It's impossible.
Most of us are not news junkies.
Right.
You know, there's a reason why some of us are low information voters. Some of us choose to be. Some of us don't have time to be as informed as we want to be. The media, I think, makes it very difficult to decide and figure out. You have to be a discerning consumer of news if you want to really know what's going on. You have to be able to take the time to figure out, do I want to trust this source? Do I want to disregard this source?
Right.
You know, all of that takes time. But I think part of it, too, is, you know, we aren't a watchdog culture.
Which is sad. You know, we should be.
Particularly because we're apparently so fed up with government. One would think that that would lead to a watchdog culture, right? If we say that we're disgruntled, if we say we're dissatisfied, well, frankly, who cares? You know, what are you going to do with that information? What are you going to do with that dissatisfaction?
Take your angst and do something. But I think that's where bloggers grew and flourished, and that's where you get websites like Bearing Arms and even the NRA blog. That is a voice that needs to be heard, and I think we're doing a good job of being heard. It's just, how far is our reach? Where are we reaching? And are we reaching who we need to reach?
You know, look, I mean, that is a legit question, I think, for every media entity to ask.
Right.
Because we are, you know, just as there's no monoculture in guns, we certainly don't have a monoculture when it comes to how we consume our media.
Right.
And we are becoming increasingly isolated and siloed, and we go to our certain sources, and that's where we go.
And I'm guilty of it too. I get up in the morning and I do the same thing every single morning, but Google makes it easy. Google News, I'm setting up different, you know, news searches and things like that, different parameters, and so I'm finding things from across the country, which is great, but I wish more people would actively seek information before listening to sources like Marie Claire for gun rights. I mean, is this where we're at in the movie?
You know, I mean, look, if you're going to go look at Marie Claire, hopefully you go look at NRA News. Right. You know, hopefully you go for that balance.
Hand in hand.
But, right?
Right.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure where the pro-gun Marie Claire is, like what magazine that would be.
There's a market, Cam. There is a market.
Anybody wants to give me the capital to start that, I'll be more than happy. Gunsplainer Monthly. All right, our good guy of the day from the Boston Herald. Italo Franchi, he's 68 years old. Wednesday, he had to follow his wife to the hospital. She was in an ambulance. And he got there, and he parked his car. And when he finally was able to leave, he goes outside the hospital and his car is gone. And
that's sad.
Yeah, right? He says, I go over there, no car. My face goes white. He said he was yelling at a police officer. Saw a police officer there. Sergeant Timothy Gahn said, I could hear someone yelling, officer, please, someone help me, sir. And I turned and there was this little old man, gray-haired old fella, kind of out of wind, asking for help. And I said, what's wrong? How can I help you? And he had a very thick Italian accent. Fracci said by the time he ran into the officer, he was near panic and he felt like he was about to have a heart attack. He told the Boston Herald, the police say, calm down, calm down. He said, I'm going to go over there right now. He take me over there. I have no money. I'm disabled. He said, don't worry about it. Calm down, calm down. Italo Franchi moved to the United States from Italy in 1967. He worked construction until he became disabled. He said he didn't see the faded small letters on the street sign warning drivers about being towed between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m.
No.
Right?
It happens.
He was towed 10 minutes after he parked. Now, Officer Gaughan, 25-year veteran of the uniform division. He was heading back to the South Boston station from Faneuil Hall. And when he found out what was going on, he said, I'm going back to South Boston, and the way I pass, I can go right by the tow lot, so I'll give you a lift. And so he took Mr. Franchi back to the tow lot so he could pick up his car. It's going to be $99. Mr. Franchi didn't have $99 to pick up his car. So the officer said, by chance, that morning I was supposed to have my own car worked on, so I brought cash to pay my mechanic. My mechanic was unable to work on the car, so I had money in my pocket. He said, whether it was fate or what have you, I asked the clerk how much it's going to be for the guy. He looked at me and said, $99. And the officer handed the clerk a $100 bill. Said, you know what? Take it. Give him his claim check. Officer Gaughan said he needed to focus on his loved one more than a parking ticket. He just kept saying, thank you, thank you. I said, don't worry about it. This is an Easter gift. Happy Easter. Take care of your wife.
Oh, that's so nice.
Right? Now, here's what makes this nice story even better. Officer Gaughan heard from the man's son-in-law yesterday asking where he could send him $100. And the officer said, well, why don't instead you buy a $100 raffle ticket? We've got a fundraiser coming up April the 8th at Florian Hall to benefit the family of retired Boston officer Mark DeLuca, who suffered a traumatic brain injury in a motorcycle crash 3 years ago. And so Officer Gaughan passing that on, doing another good deed, and that's where the money's going to go.
Paying it forward.
Right. Being in the right place at the right time.
Right. I love that.
And stepping up and doing the right thing. So I love that too. And again, you know, look, this wasn't a huge story unless you're Italo Franchi.
And his family.
This is your story.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, this is a very big deal because you're freaking out. You don't know what to do. You're already stressed out. Your wife's in the hospital. I mean, can you just imagine what this guy must have been going through? And to have an officer just offer up that simple kindness of, hey, you know what? You're not alone here. I'll help you out. I mean, that just must have meant the world to that guy.
Random acts of kindness are what keep my faith in humanity intact.
And this is part of, you know, again, look, as we talked about in the last hour, Supreme Court has ruled that the law enforcement police are not there to protect you as an individual. They can't be. That's not their job. Now, it doesn't mean that they won't
right. If
they are given the opportunity, but it means that they, because we have a police force, we're not entitled to our own personal bodyguard. That's not the way it works. They're there to protect and serve the community. But this is serving the community,
I think,
in a very visible way. So, Officer Gaughan, thank you, sir, for being one of the many good guys out there. All right, we're going to take a quick time out. The time keeps flying by, Jen.
Amazing.
I know. Tim Lee with the Center for Individual Freedom coming up on the program. Congressman Mike Kelly from Pennsylvania will join us on the program in just a little bit as well. Stick around. We do have much more. NRA News Cam & Company, sponsored by Nosler, coming up right after this.
Speaking with Jacqueline Kelly with Armed in Heels. Jacqueline, welcome to NRA News. How are you?
I'm doing so great. How are you doing?
I'm doing so well and better now that you're here, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much.
You light up the set.
So I'm glad you're here.
Tell us, what is Armed in Heels all about?
So Armed in Heels is an online retailer, and our goal is to support women who feel empowered and to feel empowered as they enter the shooting community. My husband and I started this company when he introduced me to firearms. I cried. I was terrified. I tried to go enter the industry to get more information and to engage and learn, but it was really intimidating for me. And so what we did is create Armed in Heels to support the working woman, the empowered woman, the wife, the mother that wants to get engaged in a safe way.
Okay, so you said you went and tried it. You cried. You were terrified. Was that before or after you shot?
I think he took it out of the case. I cried. And then he put it away. And
I see.
It
okay.
maybe took 2 years to get the guts to
really?
Do it again. And I don't want women to have that experience.
No way.
No. So my goal is to make sure that they have an opportunity to get into the industry in a way that really makes them feel empowered and supported and helps establish their identity further.
I think that's an awesome idea. So, Jacqueline, how do you do this?
So what we do is we very carefully target lots of products that are actually made for women. That does not mean pink. That does not mean colors. That means if I see tack pants, they better fit my curves and they better help me conceal the way I want. And holsters, the same thing. So we really go out, pressure the manufacturers, and get those products to our women so that they can have them and integrate them with part of their lifestyle.
Awesome. It seems you have it figured out. I love your approach. I love your idea.
Great.
So how can people get more information about Armed in Heels?
So we can go onto our website, which is www.armedinheels.com.
Right.
You can also visit us on Facebook at Armed in Heels. And we're certainly looking to bring a good voice out there, so we hope we can get lots of women to engage.
Keep up the good work. Jacqueline Kelly with Armed in Heels, thanks for what you're doing, and thanks for being on NRA News. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
You know the threat is real. You sit in meetings with advisors and operatives who tell you there could be Islamic sleeper cells in every major American community. You know the southern border is a welcome mat for terrorists to enter our towns and neighborhoods at will. You know about their plots to kill us in our shopping malls, our sports stadiums, and our office buildings. You won your office by talking like a champion of freedom. Now it's time to act like one. Pass a national right to carry law that guarantees my constitutional right to defend myself, my family, and my fellow Americans anywhere inside our borders. And make sure the enemies of freedom know the power of freedom. No law-abiding American should be forced to face evil with empty hands. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
Here's the truth about the Hollywood celebrities, political elites, and billionaires who attack the Second Amendment. The thought of average people owning firearms makes them uncomfortable. They don't like how the men and women who build their office buildings, vacation homes, and luxury cars, who mop their floors, clean their clothes, and serve their dinner, have access to the same level of protection as their armed security guards. They want you to surrender your freedom for a false promise of government-provided security they will never rely upon themselves. But no amount of money, power, or fame gives anyone the right to take our freedom away. At the core of the Second Amendment is the eternal truth that no life is more worthy of armed protection than another. That's what I believe, and that's what I fight for. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
Your first source for Second Amendment news and information, it is NRA News Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler. Congressman Mike Kelly of Pennsylvania joining us in just a little bit right now. I want to welcome to the program from the Center for Individual Freedom, Mr. Tim Lee. Tim, how you doing, sir? Do we have Tim Lee? Going once?
You there?
Yes. How are you, Tim?
Doing well. How is everything going?
Good. Keeping us in suspense there. Now, I want to let you know as well, you're going to hear another voice in addition to mine today. Jen Jakes of Bearing Arms is sitting in the studio with us.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Oh, doing great. Doing great. A little sunny out here.
A little sunny. Oh, poor you. It's probably nice this time of year, too, right? It's not like 115 degrees.
It's not 115, but triple digits are maybe 3 days away.
Nice.
Well, we are glad that you're with us here. I've got to ask you, I don't know if you've...
The snowstorm hits you all.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, thankfully we were able to avoid the snowstorm in the D.C. area this time around. But I've got to ask you... before we get started here, because I assume you might be writing something about this for CFIF this week. President Obama is in Cuba right now, Tim, and apparently today picked out a lovely spot in front of a big Che Guevara post, a piece of graffiti art to take their picture. Do you have any feelings one way or the other about President Obama going and hanging out with the Castro regime in Cuba this week?
Well, I'm a little more divided than most people in the center-right movement, you know, most people tend to be either strongly libertarian and favor opening up trade under the logic that, you know, that sort of thing makes people taste freedom and want more of it and brings them more to within the orbit of nations. The other side is a lot more traditional conservatives. Marco Rubio is an example. Tend to take the more sort of traditional line that these are oppressive and murderous regimes that need to be isolated and contained and, you know, sort of strangled into better behavior. I don't take a strong position either way, and I can frankly sort of see both. Reflexively, I tend to agree a little bit more with the Rubio position. You know, how is Cuba paying for what they've done?
Mm-hmm.
The Wall Street Journal had a great editorial today talking about how a lot of the people that were supposedly freed when Obama cut this deal with Cuba have been re-imprisoned. And so while the administration likes to talk about how this is bringing sort of a glasnost or perestroika to Cuba, you know, the evidence is a little bit more mixed than that. And so, you know, to some of my libertarian friends, I might say the evidence isn't necessarily strong that opening up in that way produces good results. On the other hand, I can at least see them. So the bottom line of all this is I am obviously wimpy and wishy-washy on this and cannot I'm not dodging the question, but I you know, it's a position where I can actually kind of see both sides, and so I know that doesn't usually make for good entertainment and good radio, but in fairness, I can kind of see both sides. I can, if you told me I had to choose a 50% plus one preponderance position, I would probably lean a little bit more toward the Rubio position, just because people like Rubio know a little bit more, I think, about Cuba intrinsically, and their understanding is much deeper. And so, if anything, I'm a little bit more willing to defer to them.
Okay. And by the way, I don't see that as a cop out answer. I mean, you know, look, I think that there are good arguments to be made on both sides. Because as you say, if you're concerned about human rights, you know, there is something very compelling about the idea of the nominal leader of the free world going to a place where a dictatorship reigns supreme, and then able to, you know, call them out on human rights abuses and you know, hopefully you know, start a process where, as you say, the people living in that regime can taste freedom, right, where they can experience a little bit more freedom.
Yeah, and if you look at Iran, that's perhaps another example where you know, and I'm even willing to sort of be a little bit deferential, more than usual anyway, toward the Obama administration and say, you know, they tried to take a different approach to Iran. I think his famous quotation was, you know, we will unclench our fist if you'll unclench yours. But then in 2009, obviously, there was the student uprisings and movement toward greater freedoms, and we sort of stepped back, and we didn't take a hard line or punish Iran as much. And their behavior, frankly, hasn't improved. Now, a lot of people on the left will try to say that a lot of, for lack of a better term, a lot of their parliament members in some of the most recent elections brought in some more moderate types, but they really weren't moderate at all. If you look at some of their statements about Israel, about the United States, about their proclivity toward war, and carrying on Iran's activities that have made them Iran for the past 35 years, they really haven't improved much. And so I think a lot of the moderation that some people want to see there is a little bit of a mirage. And so I guess several years' worth of experience with Iran show that approach doesn't necessarily work, and so you might translate those lessons a little bit to Cuba.
I think even China, too. I mean, you know, you go back to Nixon going to China, and I just finished over the weekend this biography of Chairman Mao. And so I didn't realize this, Tim, but when Nixon was in China, he had a one-hour meeting with Mao. That was it. They met for an hour, and they didn't talk politics. Nothing of any substance whatsoever. And so, you know, this was all about the optics as opposed to the recognition of China, the formal recognition, which could have come without a visit by the president, right? All of these trade deals, all of that stuff could have been done without a visit The visit right. seemed to be about the optics. And for Nixon at the time, it was 1971, getting ready to run for re-election. This was a way to, you know, bolster your credibility as an international statesman. For Mao, this was an ability to shore up, his security base there as a leader of the Communist Party at a time in which he was getting older, becoming more frail, and there were more challenges to his reign. The actual yeah. benefits that the people saw, I don't think were necessarily related to a trip. And I worry that for President Obama, it's about the optics as well. And for the Castro brothers, it's about the optics. For Obama, it's about burnishing his legacy. And for the Castro brothers, again, they get the legitimacy of having the first American president in 90 years come and basically say, yep, communist Cuba's here to stay.
Yeah, I think two quick points agreeing with that. Think about what this says and does for freedom fighters within Cuba. If the Castro regime can continue to behave the way that they're behaving and still have a president of the United States fly in famously like this, and you said the celebrated optics, have that go on, what does that say to them? What must you be thinking if you are a freedom fighter, if you're somebody imprisoned as a political prisoner in Cuba right now? Have all of your works and efforts been for naught? The other thing I would point out very quickly, just relating to your comments about China, keep also in mind that at the time, we used China as a lever against the Soviet Union. And so that provided some strategic benefit in that regard that Cuba, obviously, at this point doesn't offer. So even for somebody who says that opening up to China was such a great maneuver, at least that helped us geostrategically with the Soviet Union, our Cold War enemy at the time, whereas with Cuba, I mean, what's our great benefit here? So that further undermines people's efforts to draw that analogy with China.
A photo op. That's the opportunity here.
Exactly.
Hipster tourism.
That's right.
Don't forget hipster tourism. North Korea is like a little too scary a communist place for you because they're, throwing college students in jail for 15 years of hard labor. Cuba's it's communism with a tan,
Cuba
you
might
go
be
there,
for you.
You smoke a cigar, you get some rum, you come back, and you maybe even get to ride around in a 57 Chevy hybrid, Tim.
I saw something really interesting today on social media as well, and it was a commentary, and I might be bungling this, but my recollection, and I sort of breezed past it, was 100 years ago today, I want to say in a New York zoo, maybe the Bronx Zoo, they had an actual African-American as part of the exhibit, essentially under the name The Missing Link or part of its displays. And it was obviously something very, very savage and cruel. And I guess it was 100 years ago today that the man that they had held in the zoo like that killed himself. And, this perhaps maximizes the Cuba and minimizes that man's suicide. But what they were doing was drawing the analogy with Cuba, that a lot of people in America with a lot of money, essentially the limousine liberal set, arguably, go to Cuba and they take pictures of these 60-year-old cars running around. It's a museum piece to them. They go and they just think it's very quaint and cute. Meanwhile, the people in Cuba who have been trapped there for six decades, to them it's not a cute matter at all. It's not quaint. It's miserable. They're driving cars that are older than almost everybody walking the earth. And so, they drew that cruel analogy as well. And I think there's at least an element of truth to it. And so, we've got to keep that in mind, too. And when you talk about tourism, look, somebody going to Havana is probably not, well, they're going there instead of going to, say, Miami or Key West. So, I'm not sure people in Florida should be very happy about this.
I'll be really honest with you. I would be shocked. I'm sure that there will be some interest in going to Cuba. But if I were running Disney World, I wouldn't worry too much about it. If I were a Key West hotelier or a bar owner in Key West, I really wouldn't worry too much about it because
different clientele.
Yeah, I really do think that Cuba is going to appeal to a very distinct kind of traveler, a fellow traveler, one might say, Tim.
Well, Bernie Sanders apparently has already scheduled his first rally there, so maybe you're right.
Can't make
what are the gun laws like in Cuba, do you know?
Well, it's I think it's a test laboratory for the theory that that government should own a monopoly on firearms, and we see how well that's worked there in terms of safety and civil liberties and human rights. So it's a perfect laboratory, actually.
There you go. All right. So so are you going to be talking a lot at Center for Individual Freedom about Merrick Garland, the president's nominee to replace Antonin Scalia at the Supreme Court?
Yeah. You know, most of what we've been focusing on at this point, away from all the inflammatory rhetoric on both sides, is just looking at the history and looking at the constitutional element of this. What does the Constitution say? The Constitution, contrary to what a lot of people on the left are saying today, does not impose a duty on the Senate to hold hearings or to hold a vote or anything else. What the Constitution's text says, in very simple terms, is that president can only appoint on the advice and consent of the Senate. The Senate is a co-equal branch. It's not deferential to the president. It's not inferior to the president. They can just as easily not hold hearings. It's an affirmative that they have to give, an affirmative consent for the president's nominees to be seated. That does not mean that they have to or that they owe the president anything, any more than President Obama had a duty to nominate Miguel Estrada or another conservative to satisfy the Senate. You know, when Obama says we hold elections over this and I was reelected in 2012, well, even more recently than that, the Senate switched to the Republican Party in 2014, partly on the basis of its power over the judiciary. And so you can't really use the elections argument either.
Talking again with Tim Lee with the Center for Individual Freedom. Listen, I know we'll be talking more about this subject as well in the weeks to come. I'm sure that this is going to continue to be an election year issue that supporters of the president and Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders will be bringing up at every given opportunity. Unfortunately, we've got to take a break, Tim, but I appreciate you coming on the program, sir. Enjoy the sunshine and the warm weather there, and we'll look forward to talking again very soon.
Thanks, Ian. Everybody have a great week.
You too, sir. Tim Lee joins from the Center for Individual Freedom. Note, I did not ask Tim about any Sonoran dogs. I've learned my lesson. Do not mention Tucson to Tim Lee. Bad things happen. Is there a town in Wisconsin that I shouldn't mention? Do you have any, like, geographic no-go areas where it's just, like, not a good thing to talk about?
I just don't want to talk about the case with Stephen Avery. Just don't bring it up. But everybody asks me, what do you think about making a murderer? And I'm like, please don't. Let's talk about cheese curds or beer or the Packers.
You have nothing to fear because I haven't seen that show.
Me neither.
I'm running about 5 to 6 years behind television.
Good.
So...
That's probably a good
years,
place to be.
I'll ask you about it, right?
And I will probably still have not seen it.
All right, stick around. When we come back here on NRA News, Cam and Company, Jen Jakes and Bearing Arms with us for one more segment. Have you had a good time so far?
This has been amazing. Thank you so much for having me down. It really does fly by.
I know. It's incredible. And it's a little faster because you're here. I will say that.
True. Well, thank you.
Absolutely. Well, we love having you here on the program, and it's been awesome to have you in studio all afternoon long. We've got Congressman Mike Kelly, a Republican from Pennsylvania, join us after a quick timeout. Stick around. There is more Cam and Company on the way right after this. Earlier today, there was a presentation from America's First Freedom, and give me a little backstory, JR. You knew that you were going to be there, right? But you didn't know what exactly this event was going to be, did you?
Yeah, basically, I was just told there was going to be some presentation, something that obviously involved a gun. And, you know, that was basically the only info I had, which, you know, after covering quite a few things for the NRA, I've had to go do stories where I had even less to go on. So, you know, I didn't think anything unusual of it. And sometimes you're just told, yeah, there's a story, it involves guns, it's in Quantico, go, you know? So, you know, hey, it's not a big thing. I had a little more guidance here, so I just figured, yeah, there's going to be a presentation, somebody's getting a gun, and that's about all the info I had.
And so you show up, and what happened, JR?
So I show up, and there's all the builders and these wonderful people who have come together to that have built this custom rifle. And next thing I know, there's Chris Cox, And he starts talking about me, and I'm like, okay, what is going on here? This is not about me. This is not why I do this. It's not why I served. But, So basically what happened is all these guys came together, and they created this amazing rifle for me, left-handed, 308. There's too much stuff on it for me to even sit here and list, but... it's just this amazing rifle that they put together, and they had done it in secret behind my back, didn't tell me, and Chris Cox presented it to me, and I'm blown away. I'm still blown away. I'm looking at this rifle here in front of me, and I'm going, is that really mine? Because that's one of those things any warrior, especially gun guy like me, wants something like this.
Right.
You just realize it's probably not attainable, but these guys made it happen, and I'm forever grateful for that.
Well, listen, I think that we had a chance to talk with Mark Chestnut yesterday, and he kind of let me know what was going on, and I think everybody there at America's First Freedom was just so happy and honored that they could do something like this, because JR, and I think that you understand this as well, this is about more than just you. This is I think a small way of showing our appreciation and the folks from America's First Freedom's appreciation for everything that you've done for this country and everything that our military continues to do, and the men and women of our military continue to do.
Yeah, one thing that I've tried to do, people like to sit and list off my accomplishments, and, that's all fine and dandy, but I think sometimes it gets lost in why you try to keep doing that, and why I've continued fighting and tried to conquer the world, and, I think you try to keep up that American fighting spirit that, you might be knocked down, but you're not out, and you got to keep fighting. And, and I try to exemplify that, and because there are wounded warriors out there and a lot of veterans who, need that help up and they need that inspiration. So, it's not really so much about me as it is trying to inspire people and help people and help a fellow wounded warrior up and give them a hand up that they need so they can get back on that horse and get back to trying to conquer the world the way, and conquer your battles one battle at a time, just like we were meant to be.
How concerned are you right now about the state of affairs, both for the job that the men and women of our military are tasked to do, and the shape that our military is in right now?
I think there is way too much social engineering going on, and way too many pet progressive causes, and focus on just letting our brave men and women to let them do their jobs. I would say when fighting global warming is apparently supposed to be more important than killing ISIS, I would say we have a severe a lack of the best priorities out there. So there are a lot of changes that have been happening to the military. I don't agree with most of them, especially when they're made by people who have never served. They've never worn boots. They've never walked a mile in my boots or carried my pack. And you really can't have people like that. Sometimes you just need to let the military do what it does best, and that is, of course, tackling our enemies, and our enemies are all over the place. ISIS is not contained. It's all over the place. It's in Europe. It's right here in America. And the reality is let our military do what it does. Stop micromanaging. Stop getting it sidetracked with these ridiculous pet progressive causes. And, the same thing goes with diplomacy with Iran. I'm one of the 871 American troops who were wounded by an Iranian shape charge. There were somewhere in the neighborhood of 230 or 240 troops who were killed by Iranian shape charges. And now apparently Iran's going to be our buddies after they captured 12 of our sailors and humiliated them around the world.
Welcome back. Thanks again for being a part of this edition of NRA News, Ham and Company, sponsored by Nosler. Congressman Mike Kelly of Pennsylvania is going to join us here in just a little bit. We've got Jen Jakes of Bearing Arms with us for one more segment. It's going to be weird tomorrow. Going to be back to being here all by myself.
All by your lonesome.
I know. Might have to bring a baby goat in just to...
Llama Rama. We're about due.
We are about due for Llama Rama,
wasn't
Greg.
That March?
June.
Oh, well.
June, typically when the Duskin and Stevens Beef and Beer Benefit right. held down in North Carolina, benefiting the Duskin and Stevens Foundation and our friend and viewer and listener, Greg Hall, who owns a llama farm in North Carolina, has been bringing his llamas down for the past couple of years. They're pretty cool. I will say, when Greg stopped by our studio here in Farmville last year,
mm-hmm.
with one of his llamas, Mushu, in the back of his minivan. Not in the trailer or anything like that. Nope. Greg has the llama in the minivan.
Because why wouldn't you?
Right. Mm-hmm. And so Greg was walking his llama up and down Main Street Farmville. And then he came over and we were talking and we're outside and he said, hold on to the llama. I got to go do something. And so then I'm standing out there on Main Street in Farmville with the llama.
Where was the paparazzi?
Llama, right? The paparazzi hasn't really found Farmville yet. It's a paparazzi free place.
That's a missed opportunity on their part.
Yeah, well, I took a selfie with a llama because how could you not, right?
I mean, if you are going to take a selfie, it's when you're holding a llama.
Exactly. And now my kids want llamas, and Greg has been pushing.
You have room.
The idea. Yeah, we have room. The problem is we don't have the fencing for llamas.
That can be fixed, Cam.
It can be.
Put it up.
It's a lot of hard work and time to actually do it.
I'll come down and help you for a day.
Yeah? Oh, we'll get it done, no problem.
No problem.
Oh, we can get Benny Spies down here maybe in the off season.
Okay, that would be fun because you know we're good friends.
I know.
But if he's coming, then Jana has to come too.
So all of a sudden this is like a fencing bee.
It is.
Right? Like an old school fencing bee. We can just have all my friends come down.
That's a Media Matters title.
Help dig fences.
Cam Edwards has all these people fencing. Get it? Now he's fencing.
Then I would be accused of having a high fence preserve, right, where I'm just, keeping my llamas caged and,
It's not free range
llama. Oh, it's gotta be something. No, I don't think I really don't think you want to free range the llamas.
No.
We free range the chickens, that's
I think that's so that's, neat that they just stay there.
They do. They don't really wander around.
They're like, that's where my food is. I'm going to stay here.
Yeah, they'll wander a little bit, but they stay fairly close because they know there are predators out there. They've seen their friends get eaten. They've seen some stuff.
They've seen they've seen it go down.
They want to stick around close to home. We actually have new chickens. Yesterday, our friends, as we're waiting for the congressman to join us, I'll tell this brief story here. So our friends have a 6-month-old dog who has decided that he likes to play with chickens.
So much so.
So much so that the chickens are apparently dying of terror after this dog is playing with them.
Sad.
So, yeah. So our friend said, this is not happening until the dog gets under control. Can you take our chickens? So we welcomed in some chickens from a neighboring farm.
I think I took a picture of them last night. Actually, I had your daughter take a picture for me because I couldn't get up in the back of the truck. I was too tired from training. I'm like, here, you're there. Take this picture. But they're beautiful animals.
They are. And they're absolutely, I think they're so entertaining to watch. Like, watching chickens better than 80% of what's on television.
We have the chicken chat a lot on Twitter, and I really think I need chickens.
They're like soap opera. It's a soap opera. It just is. It's an absolute soap opera watching the chickens do their thing. Right? Oh, it's seriously, I can watch for hours. All right, Congressman Mike Kelly of Pennsylvania is going to join us on the program here in a couple of minutes, unless his congressional duties keep him from the show today. He's usually very good about joining us. So if Congressman Kelly can't make it, I assume that there is something going on. And he'll join us again in the very near future. But I do want to mention, I brought this up earlier in the show, in Rhode Island, little state, lots of laws going on, though, inundating the state capitol, both pro and anti-gun bills. Before lawmakers in Rhode Island, the Boston Herald reporting that lawmakers there are considering more than a dozen bills that would either strengthen or relax gun restrictions in the state. Bill would criminalize owning or selling of ammunition feeding devices that can accept more than 10 rounds. So, magazine ban there in Rhode Island. A Republican-sponsored bill would prohibit using state funds to enforce federal firearms rules. Bipartisan legislation, the Boston Herald reports, would allow for the automatic renewal of a gun permit or license, and another bipartisan bill would allow people who have concealed carry licenses issued by Massachusetts, Connecticut, and, quote, other states to carry concealed firearms in Rhode Island. So what other states beyond Massachusetts and Connecticut? Kind of unclear at this point, but
should be interesting.
Maybe limited reciprocity there in the state of Rhode Island. You know, it's interesting. I mean, Rhode Island is, it is an interesting state because it's so small. Again, voters, I think, can have a big influence on how things go. And there are, look, there's certainly no shortage of anti-gun lawmakers in Rhode Island, but there's also a lot of gun owners in Rhode Island. I mean, surprisingly so. You would think maybe it's a New England state. It's, you know, it's kind of a, at least used to be industrial.
Right.
Really? Are there room for gun owners? But no, it's amazing how many gun owners there are in the state of Rhode Island and how vocal they are in opposition to anti-gun bills like this.
And again, make your phone calls, because I know even in Wisconsin, they would say, I had a representative tell me, if we get 2 to 3 phone calls, that's really unheard of. But
really?
you get 15 people calling about one thing. That's a big deal.
Absolutely it is. All right, join us on the program right now. Very pleased to have with us the Congressman Mike Kelly from Pennsylvania. How you doing, sir?
Great, Cam. Thanks for having me on.
It is my pleasure. We're also joined today by Jen Jakes of Bearing Arms. So if you hear another voice here, that would be Jen asking you a question or two.
All right, that's perfect.
But I've got the first question right off the bat here. We have seen, thanks to your efforts and efforts of others in Congress, a funding ban on the arms trade treaty, at least for fiscal year 2016. You're trying to get this implemented for the next fiscal year as well, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. So even though President Obama has signed this arms trade treaty, the Senate hasn't ratified this. But we know that the president, let's be honest, Congressman, the president sometimes has a problem with boundaries, you know, and the things that a president is supposed to do and supposed to leave to other branches, sometimes those lines just get blurred. So is this an attempt to prevent the executive branch from moving forward when the Senate has not indicated a willingness to accept the arms trade treaty?
Listen, and I think both you and I and any of our listeners know that after 7+ years of watching this president, that really he's very sincere when he says he's got a phone, he's got a pen, he'll do whatever he wants to do. His executive overreach has been stunning. But what's even more stunning is that there's too many people in our country that don't understand what is taking place right now and what is being taken from us. This United Nations Arms Trade Treaty is something we've been fighting for a long time. We go to the appropriators and we tell them not one penny should be allotted or put into any type of legislation that funds the implementation of the Arms Trade Treaty. Now, you know, Secretary Kerry did sign that agreement. It's called a zombie agreement, as you know, because while it hasn't hasn't ratified by the Senate, it's just there. It's kind of floating around. And I think for the American people, we have got to be so vigilant, especially with this president. His entire agenda has always been to undercut who we are and what's made us exceptional as a country and our place in the world. So what we try to do is each year, as we start to debate what we're going to be funding, we try to get to all the different committees of jurisdiction, let them know we're still fighting against this United Nations Arms Trade Treaty that Secretary Kerry signed. It has not been ratified by our Senate, but we're trying to make sure that we just put shine a bright light on that, that there's no way he can kind of sneak it through, do something different. I think all of us have reached the point where we have got to do something different this November. We have got to get people in office that do think we're an exceptional country and are really concerned with what has been enshrined for us in our Constitution and our Bill of Rights that has been trampled on. So that's what we're trying to do, Cam. But you know what? You have always featured this. Our members always answer on this thing. And when we have the gold standard, when it comes to arms policies, that's Mrs. Clinton talking, by the way, when she was Secretary of State, not me. We would say to other people around the world, if you want to adopt our policy, that's fine. Don't ask us to join something that we don't believe in. By the way, when you look at the top 10 producers of arms, you know, Russia and China are right up there with us, along with the U.S., the U.K., Germany, and France. But keep on mind, Russia and China have not signed on to this. They don't even go through the fakery that, oh, yeah, we signed this and we're going to abide by it. We know they're not going to abide by anything. So, yeah, we're pushing it all the time. We have a ton of members on board with this. We have chairmen from all the committees of jurisdiction on board with it. What we try to do is just make sure. It's like a Paul Revere moment for us. We got to let people know what's happening. We got to keep them on top of it. And we can never, ever sleep of thinking that we can take one day off or one play off and think that we can keep our rights in place and we can keep our sovereignty over the way we want to defend ourselves and how we're going to help our friends around the world that need our assistance through gun policies and arms policies.
So once people know what's going on, what can they do to help you?
What they should do is, and I appreciate you asking that question, they need to contact their representative, whoever it may be. and whatever the 50 states that they're in, write a letter, make a phone call, and say, listen, this United Nations Arms Trade Treaty, we need you to be on board. We need you to support any efforts to make sure that not one single penny of taxpayer money gets used to support an arms trade treaty that really minimizes the United States and the world and our ability to defend ourselves. So it really is, it's the contact with different members in both the House and the Senate. We're watching. We hope that you're watching too. And we want you to know that we're depending on you to defend us, and we'll be keeping track of it. That's the most important thing. When we let people know who we are, you know, they always say 90% of life is showing up, because when you show up, people know you care. We've got to let these people know that we're showing up and we care, and we're gravely concerned over this effort to take away our ability to develop our own arms trade treaties and our own arms trade policies.
Talking again with Congressman Mike Kelly of Pennsylvania. Obviously, Congressman, this is, again, you're hoping to affect the budget for fiscal year 2017. So we are getting kind of close here, right? We've got a few months before the budgets are going to be approved. So this isn't something that you really wait on. If you're a gun owner, make sure that you talk to your congressperson now.
Absolutely. Whoever it is that represents you in the House of Representatives or in the Senate, this is not me begging for it. It has nothing to do with me, but it has to do with every single American out there, our ability to defend ourselves under any situation, and our ability to deal with people around the world that look to us for help, that depend on us to help them get through these very tough times against some really bad actors that are out there. These other people are going to take advantage of every time the United States steps away from the plate or tries to lead from behind. I have absolutely no idea what that means. Neither does any other common sense person. If it's not us, if it's not the United States, if we aren't the ones that are defending liberty and freedom around the world, who will it be? And when we vacate that spot, when we walk away from that leadership position and create a vacuum, it is filled very quickly with bad actors. And we can't sit back and watch what's happening in the world today, in a world that's completely upside down and on fire, and think that our friends in Ukraine, our friends in Israel, our friends in any of these countries that are under heavy, heavy assault can make it without us being there and without our arms trade policies that enable us to continue to do the things we do, not just to defend ourselves, but to help our friends when they're in trouble. So this is absolutely critical. This isn't some whim that we have. This isn't some passing fancy that we have. This is defending who we are as a nation and our position in the world.
Congressman, thank you as always, sir, for your time. It is a pleasure talking with you. Hope we can do this again soon. And thanks for what you're doing.
Thanks so much, Cam. Keep up the fight, everybody.
Congressman Mike Kelly from Pennsylvania joining us on the program. Jen Jakes of Bearing Arms, thanks for hanging out today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I hope to come back.
You bet. We'll be talking to you soon. You know that. All right. And we'll talk to you as well. Another edition of NRA News, Cam and Company, coming up tomorrow. We'll see you there.